Hi, we have some technical difficulties this week. You'll notice some audio issues, specifically levels and clipping. I cleaned it up as best as I could, and I think it turned out okay. I do apologize if it's a bit rough. So, I hope you enjoyed the episode. We have a lot of cool stuff to talk about.
And 60,000 people work for the Canada Revenue Agency. I'm a big cog in a giant organization.
Well, I always knew you'd be joining the devil at some point in your life. And the fact that you've joined the Revenue Agency is essentially... That will pan out exactly as expected.
Exactly.
So thank you for listening to the Scotchcast this week. I'm your host, Sophie Cynic. Joining me today is Thurbleton.
Hello.
Nubarama, the devil.
Hey. What's hip-hop happen?
Neil, who hasn't kind of been here for a while. What's up, Neil? How are you doing? What was your handle again? You have a weird I forgot your handle.
Yeah, Slam Andrews is the handle.
Right,
so, Slam Andrews. Yep, Slam Andrews or Neil. Either way.
Cool. So we've actually got a lot to talk about this week, and not necessarily that much time to talk about it in. We got a lot of news. So as per our current format, we're starting with news, guys. Let's start with the biggest hitter. I don't know. How many of you guys are going to be buying a video card this year? Raise your hand. We're on video to each other. I'm raising my hand. Nubarama is raising his hand. Two hands, and the other two are shaking their heads. All right.
First paycheck, bitch. 1080. My entire first paycheck is going to go to a 1080 and a bunch of new games. Probably Doom. Yeah.
Okay, tell me what happened. What happened over this last fortnight in terms of video cards?
What happened? Well, there was an event at DreamHack. It was DreamHack, right?
Yeah, it was DreamHack. I forget what, Boston? It was some random city. It wasn't LA. It was somewhere else.
It was Europe, I thought. Or maybe not. Oh. I don't remember. Oh, no. It was in the Pacific. I think it was in the Pacific.
Okay.
But, yeah, so there was an event where, you know, they talked about NVIDIA talked about some interesting technologies about video game filmmaking, interesting VR tech, and something small called the Pascal series.
It's weird. It's like they looked at E3, but not this E3. It was like E3 from like fucking 6 years ago. And we're like, let's do that. That's clearly the exact, like, what people, the gamers are looking for in 2016. So you had like a small stage, like kind of a shitty little stage, which is probably not out of control, but like the slides were like, some of them were just straight up, like, these may as well be, this is PowerPoint, isn't it? I just looked at them, yeah. This is just PowerPoint, isn't it? And beyond that, like, the videos were like 10 seconds long. It's just some stupidly small match.
Oh, and a guy named Tom probably got fired from NVIDIA. Do you remember that? Were you watching that live?
No, I didn't.
Oh,
watch
you weren't
the
watching
half,
it live.
I was watching Civil War. Like, what happened after I left?
Amazing. So basically, they did a tech demo on VR, right? And they had a guy on the mouse and on mic just explaining some of the stuff, and he kept like cutting over the CEO on the stage talking about this shit. And then the CEO tries to say, Tom, could you stop interrupting me? I'm trying to do my thing.
Wow.
At first, we all thought it was joking. And then he kept like fucking up. And the CEO was like super serious. And so some guy named Tom at NVIDIA lost his job that night. It was very sad. May 6th. Je suis Tom.
That's not sad. If you're talking over your CEO, you don't deserve to work for any company. Start your own business. And then let it fail and language.
But they spent 2 hours, the first hour talking about useless shit nobody cares about, and then the second hour introducing their 1080 and 1070 series NVIDIA Pascal GTX cards.
Before we get into that, I just need to say, right, that after watching this, I actually find it ultra refreshing. Sorry, not refreshing. I find it It reminds me of reasons I like E3. Because at E3, you have fake audiences and journalists. So you've got, like, people who clap when you need them to clap and shut the fuck up during the things that actually matter. And you have journalists who are just silent doing their fucking jobs. And everything just kind of works as expected. It's like the Oscars, where like you may as well just have like a applause light just behind the camera, right? This was like clearly actual people, and it made me realize that no, you
they
can't
called out into the crowd.
Yeah, you can't have people
some,
in a crowd.
Crowd participation in the conference.
Oh, yeah, God. Jason, keep talking. Like, what the fuck? Like, this is what there was. At least I'm pretty sure it was the one lady who just kept fucking shouting, like, fucking Jason or whatever
zingers.
The fuck is.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And it was just like, was like embarrassed laughter. Like, the first time was funny because it was like, go Jason or something like that. And everyone like laughed. And then she kept going because obviously we fueled the fire and there was just pity laughter. So it'd be like him talking, then some random lady in the audience heckling him essentially. And then fucking pity laughter every 5 minutes to this whole fucking like 1 hour long presentation. Never do that. That's the takeaway. So go on.
But otherwise, so they showed off the physical copies of the 1080 cards, and they are exactly what was leaked a couple weeks in advance. It looks like future card.
No,
it looks doesn't. Like a card from the Matrix.
No, it doesn't.
No. So basically what they are announcing, they announced two SKUs, contrary to some leaks that were saying they were going to announce three SKUs, mm-hmm. the 1070 and the 1080 at $599 USD and $349, I believe.
Yep.
Or was it $379?
Somewhere $379.
$379, right. At those two price points. So a fairly big gap between the two. And they effectively did not really highlight any performance. Obviously, you want to wait for benchmarks, which will go live, on the 17th, so Tuesday,
okay,
right?
That's not entirely true. They lied to us for a good like 15 minutes about performance, and then they didn't say anything about the 1070. So
before we go, they showed 1070 on the graph like once,
yeah,
but it was basically meaningless.
It was a meaningless
graph. In terms of what they showed about the quality is they showed three clips of Tomb Raider, The Division, and I think it was Battleborn.
This made me actually mad.
It was one of those games. And they're like, look at these games. They're running at highest settings, 1080p, 60 frames per second on the brand new 1080. Like, that's their announcement.
And the crowd went wild.
Yeah, they went fucking wild. That you can run games that have already come out at 60 frames per second at 1080p. That was what excited the people. So basically, the messaging point that they hit over and over again is this is the most power efficient card ever made, right? And that at the relative power consumption, it's faster than the Titan X. So specifically, they have not said it's faster than the Titan X, bar none. But what their graph showed was at consuming 0 to 180 watts of power, the 1080 is about two times faster than the Titan X.
Right.
And then like the curve just ends after that.
Right.
So we have no clue what that actually means. And then the X and the Y have no like relevant information.
Scale.
It just says relative power consumption per performance. And it's just this blank graph with like a single
lies.
I don't know. Yeah, it was like a square root of X line and then just a dot at the top. Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was just garbage. It was like actually
amazingly unhelpful.
Yeah, it was like, how stupid do you think we are? And apparently very, and also it worked. So they nailed it in terms of how stupid apparently their audience is. Because holy shit, that crowd was going wild. People at home were going crazy. People were like, I'm buying this. Without even seeing the benchmarks, it's just like, this is what
they're really riding on that price point.
Yeah.
Like that was the headline.
The interesting thing is they announced the Founders Edition of the 1080, right? Which was very confusing because people thought it was basically like a, you know how aftermarket companies sell like the super overclock cards
that
are slightly
the ones
higher.
You actually want.
Exactly, that have a better cooler, etc.
Better cooler.
So people thought they were just cutting out the middleman and selling these directly. No. Basically, when you hear the term NVIDIA 1080 Founders Edition, that is straight up just the base card.
Reference.
That NVIDIA is selling. It's a reference card at $799. That's their price point. $100 above their reported price point of $699. Yeah. They're just putting their reference card higher, so aftermarket companies will just basically...
Which means, again, they're kind of lying. So they're because the card that's going on sale at the end of the month is... the one sold by NVIDIA, and the one sold by NVIDIA is going to be the Founders Edition, which is...
Yes, there's only one card. There's only the Founders Edition sold by NVIDIA.
And that's $100 more than the price they were touting. So it's going to be $699.
Yes. So there's actually no guarantee that any card might come out at that $699 price point.
$599 price point. Yeah, there's no guarantee that it'll ever be a $599.
It's $699 and $599. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's like... So not only are you getting a shitty, over-designed... blower style cooler that the only reason you're paying that much for it is because it's mostly made of aluminium, which isn't actually that great a selling point, considering it's only got one blower style fan on it, and you get to have that like sweet NVIDIA logo on it, like the big NVIDIA logo on the side. Great job, guys, great job. And people are gonna buy it,
but it looks like a DeLorean. I gotta have it.
Yes.
I've
got like the ugliest card in my system, but it's fantastic.
It doesn't matter. I don't have a fucking translucent computer case. Like
LEDs
it's
on
below
the
my desk, firstly. Yeah. So I couldn't even see it if it was see-through. And like people don't realize your graphics cards are seated like on their side. So you can only see the side of your graphics card at any time. Like, why do you give a shit? It's such a waste of time and money. But before we jump back, if we go back to graphics cards, they did announce a couple cool things before they actually showed off the cards. Actually, no, after they showed off the cards, they announced a couple cool things to see what these cards can do.
Technical difficulty, you guys.
Has a virus on his computer. That's not
literally
even a joke.
Mid-podcast. So we've forgotten what the fuck we were talking about, because just to go offline for a second there, we set up the call. So Noobarama, I think you were describing the 1080 / 1070 difference.
No, I was talking about some of the other things that the Pascal cards do.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Regarding VR and triple monitors setups.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll start with the triple monitor setup. Is most people, when they have three monitors, they have it basically their center monitor, obviously straight forward facing in a straight line, right?
Yeah,
In front of you. And then they have their left and right monitor slightly curved, so you have sort of like a curved angle that you see all three pictures in.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is the game renders your image on each of those side monitors as if they were also set up straight, like your center monitor is. So your image is actually distorted a couple like 45 degrees in your view angle as well. So you're actually only seeing a limited amount on your screen.
Yeah.
What games that support whatever the stupid technology Pascal is touting
viewports
does is viewports, something like that.
Yeah.
It automatically adjusts it as if
this is like the most fringe case fucking like feature I've ever heard. Like, this is for people with triple monitor setups. We've got you covered. Like, what the fuck? Who has that? Who the fuck cares? Just move, like, sure. Why'd you have to spend 15 minutes talking about a triple monitor setup only feature?
Yeah, that seems really disproportionate.
The fuck you
like, guys? I love triple monitor setups, and I'm dying to get one, but I'm not...
No.
That subset of the population is pretty
low. That's a very small slice of the... But, like, to be fair, like, I don't think anything here needed to be a press conference at all. Like,
other than the release of the card. Yeah.
That didn't need to be a press conference. It could have just been a press release.
People in general love the fanfare and the excitement of a live stream, right?
But also not nerds really, especially. Because there was, like, we're coming from in a world where an E3 press conference can have, like, fucking 200,000 to, like, 1.2 million people watching.
The 30,000. No, it has over 100,000.
Okay, when I was watching the start, I didn't only look at the number at the start. 100,000. Right. Okay, you know what? Okay, that's an E3 almost level thing. Yeah. I wonder why they're tuned in, though. Like, I wonder
because they're fucking nerds.
What were the viewing numbers like for the PC show at E3?
I don't remember.
Do we know anything about that?
12 people? I don't know.
It was far too many. It was. I remember sitting there in that video in the Twitch chat or whatever, thinking none of us should be here. Like we're all wasting
our
time.
Yeah, the number of people that watched that stream also equals the number of people who were disappointed that night.
Yeah, that's one to one. That Venn diagram is just a circle. It's just a circle.
I don't recall that show being especially.
It was garbage.
It was the worst thing ever.
It was the only E3 conference I was doing other stuff during.
Yeah. I preferred the NVIDIA conference over to that PC gaming conference because I wasn't facepalming the entire time.
At least they were calling, even though none of the tech, all the tech was arguably useful and none of the tech was amazingly useful. Even because at least it was something new and shiny. It's like, oh, okay, I've never seen that before.
Graphics cards are important. Especially whenever new things come out, it signals a new generation of not PC gaming hardware, but also games that can utilize it. Mm-hmm. The PC gaming show was like, do you like these indie games? Well, we got people to come talk about ours. Guild Wars has an expansion.
Whatever.
Holy shit.
You can glide around. You can glide.
Was that the announcement? Was that the announcement when that was announced?
That was that was shown off at...
Oh, I think that was the very first one.
That was the big announcement.
The big takeaways from this, I can essentially boil my big takeaways down to 10A is coming out. We don't know how good it's going to be. It's probably going to be pretty good though. 1070 sounds like a mad deal, but we don't know how good that's going to be at all. And beyond that, it's just fucking, hey, let's just see how this all pans out. And AMD is kind of lagging at the moment. That's my take.
Well, one quick thing before we move on is that they also showed the VR tech, which is also interesting and shows partly why the 1080 is such a good card for VR, is when you do VR, it renders the whole image, you can see all of it, but in reality you have blind spots where the image, even though it renders, you have no vision of it, so you might as well not be seeing it. Mm-hmm. It basically, for those again that support the hardware, will not render those sort of useless sections of your view.
Yeah.
And therefore obviously increasing performance.
Right.
And that was an interesting thing. It's sort of cards sort of tending to adapt to VR, which is kind of, I don't know, exciting, I guess. Well, I'm not excited for VR, so that's not that exciting.
But here's the thing though, right? Like say they're not lying to our faces and this thing's more powerful than Titan X. Okay. So if this thing's more powerful than Titan X, and the 970 is more powerful than the 980 Ti, which is, again, if they're not lying to us, the case, right? The min spec for VR is a 970, and everything's made to run at that min spec. And if you've seen any of the VR demos, the max spec doesn't actually look that much better because it's just everything's made for 970. So it's like the PlayStation Neo, but with less import than the PlayStation Neo. It's for VR specifically, because it's they have a fixed spec they're working to. You surpassing that isn't actually giving you anything, except for a slightly larger guarantee that games that already run badly will run okay. Like the games that you probably don't want to play anyway, because the developers weren't even good enough to hit a fixed spec. I tend to be really mean to developers only because I have high standards and I'm not apologetic about that. But I'm sorry, if you're working to a fixed spec on PC and you can't hit that,
video games.
Don't make games
for the Ouya.
Don't charge for your video games. Just put them out don't charge for them at least. Don't insult me by asking me to pay a ridiculous fee. Most VR games are also fucking overpriced. So charging me an overpriced amount for a game that doesn't even run well on a fixed specification, even when some people exceed their fixed specification, doesn't run well. Some of those games out there just shouldn't be on sale. But that's the only guarantee if you get from a card that's twice as powerful as a Titan X in VR. You're not actually getting much for it. I can't even imagine a near future where there would be a VR game that would really take advantage of it, because can you even think of a VR game that's been announced that seems like a fucking graphical powerhouse?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. So,
other than just supporting baseline VR, we're not really seeing anything yet that's pushing the envelope there. Yeah, so
pretty much,
it's going to be some time, I think, before anyone is both ambitious and has any sort of focus on hardware that see anything interesting come out of that.
Yeah.
So let's do like, a roundtable, though. Mm-hmm. Are you going to get a 1080 or a 1070, Cynic?
I'm going to wait for benchmarks, which is the correct answer. But
okay.
If a 1070 is as powerful as a 980 Ti, well, okay, so here's what I'm looking for. I'm going to get either an ultra-wide 32-inch or a 4K 40-inch, right? Those are straight up the next monitors I'm getting. I'm getting them by the end of this year. Especially with my TV, I am sold on 4K. It looks gorgeous. If I'm at a minimum for the pixel density, like I'm actually selling myself less and less on a 32-inch ultra wide because of the pixel density and just how nice it is to have that like extra like lack of graininess on a 4K screen. So I'm just gonna be looking at 4K benchmarks, and if the 1080, because I suspect that neither of these cards can do 4K well. I suspect that a 1080 would, like, if we're talking about ultra settings, it's not even going to hit 40 FPS on The Witcher. Because currently the Titan X can't hit 40 on ultra.
Well, it's fast. It's also faster than two 1080s in SLI, or 980s in SLI, yeah, which doesn't mean anything because SLI is a broken technology that maybe increases your performance. Yeah.
Right. So it's like, yeah, I'm going to be looking. So in this, the 1080 hits a particular breakpoint. And what I mean by breakpoint is like, if you set The Witcher to high at 4K, you get 60. And I'm like, okay, all right, sure. I can live with a drop from ultra to high and actually hit 60 and be at 4K. If it hits a breakpoint like that with any of the games I care about, I'd buy a 1080. If it doesn't, I'm just going to get a 1070. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get a new card either way because I want the new HDMI, DisplayPort standard, so I can get a higher resolution, adaptive sync technology new monitor. For example, the DisplayPort 1.4, which is on both of these, supports 4K at 100 hertz with adaptive V-sync, so G-sync, and that's what I want. That's the new it supports ultra wides beyond 100 hertz. With G-Sync. So, like, those are two things I really want. So, either way, I'm getting one of these cards. It's just, like, which one is the more efficient for what I'm actually going to use it for. How about you?
I am probably going to get the 1080.
We had a long talk about this. I was like, why?
Okay, here's the thing, right? If I get the 1080, I can upgrade my monitor whenever later this year, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If I get the 970 and a monitor, I'm probably not going to want to upgrade from a 970 to a Titan, Pascal Titan, right?
Right.
For me, that's
shouldn't get a 970. You shouldn't get a 970.
No.
Are you talking about a 1070?
1080. 1070. Sorry, I'm talking about 1070.
Yeah, you're probably not going to want to go from 1070 to a 1080 Ti or anything.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm just going to get the 1080.
Oh, yeah, that's... Sorry.
I also want a card that's going to spend as much as possible out of my paycheck so I can easily get rid of my paycheck because who needs money from your first paycheck?
Yeah. I forgot to say. So
that only weighs you down. So.
Exactly. the less money you have, the happier you are. Trust us. I was going to say, my 1070 stipulation, and we talked about this earlier, the noob, it was because, like, I get a 1070 now and I'm going to get a Titan later. Like, it's not like I'm being overallly, like, fucking responsible with my money. I'm being actually less responsible with my money this way.
I don't want to make $1,000 or, like, $500 investment for the period of one calendar year or
less than the calendar
8
year.
Months and then say, oh, okay, time to go up. Exactly. Like, I've already done that. My 960 I bought a year ago, and I'm getting the 1080. So that's it until whatever, the next, maybe like the next tick.
If I get a 1080, because it'll hit one of those breakpoints, I won't upgrade. But if I get a 1070, I'm definitely getting a Titan.
I don't know, but the scary thing is with like this PS Neo business, maybe games are going to be more intensive again.
I hope so.
It's going to be like, oh, fuck.
I hope so, man.
I just upgraded.
All right, Neil. So you were shaking your head earlier about upgrading. What's your stance right here, right now?
So I just, I basically just retooled my entire rig. Mm-hmm. What was that? It's been about a year now. Mm-hmm. And I just plugged a 980 in my current machine. So I feel that's pretty respectable. And I kind of treat my graphics cards sort of like any sort of nasty disease hiding in your DNA. It skips a generation, you know? So...
That's a good point.
The 1180 drops, and then I'll probably be in a good spot to retool everything else.
Yeah.
My main target is to finally get some liquid cooling in my next build, and then by then hopefully I will summon up the courage right around with the graphics cards for that generation release.
Yeah.
So, no, I was hoping, though.
I'm sorry.
If the one thing they talked about at that conference is you probably won't need water cooling because of how heat efficient this card's going to be, right?
Ooh, yes. Fucking yeah. That screenshot of it running at 2.1 gigahertz at 63 degrees, neither of which are within the spec of the card, so we don't know how they got to that.
That's overclocked, but they basically said
what? Water cooling. Like we don't
when
know.
when they achieved that with the 980 Ti's, like two or like a single 980 Ti on liquid nitrogen, they're saying that does not require that kind of ridiculous.
Right. Okay. So I won't need liquid nitrogen. Check.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But the interesting thing is the fact that it is a single 8-pin means it is actually quite power efficient, yes. Right? And when they were running their demos with you know, at 60 FPS, those like super high res models, it was clocking at about 60 degrees Celsius out of a 94 degrees safe sort of ceiling. So, I mean, one thing they probably won't lie about is that it is actually fairly
powerful. Don't get me started about power efficiency. Like, I couldn't give less off a fuck about power efficiency. If I was worried about the power, okay, first and foremost, power efficiency barely matters because cards don't go at 100% all the time. They're like absolutely TDP, obviously stuff, thermal efficiency, all that kind of stuff just determines how reliable your card is. That's fine. But you cannot sell me anything on power efficiency when it comes to PC gaming. Like fuel efficiency, sure, that's like real world shit. We're talking about the thing in your PC that you use like for 2 hours every couple of days, or like maybe 8 hours of a stretch once every couple of weeks. Like especially with people like us who have jobs, it's like how often do I play an intensive PC game? Maybe once a day, maybe. And so it's like, how much actual power am I saving? So then the other side is like, okay, then you need less powerful PSU. I'm sorry, I have a 1000 watt PSU in my rig. Like, why do I have a 1000 watt PSU? Because it actually uses less energy. It's platinum rated. So it's like, it's I know it's got 1000 watts in the box, but it actually sips less than anything else and runs cooler and doesn't need to turn on its fans. So my PC is almost silent. Like, I made purchasing decisions to mitigate that a long time ago. I don't need you. And if it's someone who's in the market for a 980, they probably already have like a good 650 watt, 550 watt PSU, like at a minimum, because you need that to run a 980. So it's like, you're not selling me on anything you actually give a fuck about. And the thing you're talking about doesn't actually matter to your consumer. So,
right. And you're not, it's not like when you buy a graphics card, it comes with that little sticker that you get like on a new TV. It's like, here's how much energy you're going to use per year.
Like 4 stars out of 6. God, like what?
That's the last of the concerns.
And this is a mobile market. Sure. Like, this is a mobile graphics card. I'm like, absolutely, that's so important to me. But it's no, you missed your mark. You're just trying to make big numbers sound bigger than they actually are.
That's been their marketing tactic for years.
So. But it's curious to me, Neil, like your approach, because like the skipping a generation approach made sense to me a long time ago, but I've essentially turned off that in recent years, like partially because I have a job, but the other half, and I'm really irresponsible with money. The other half of it is, I think Mass Effect 2 solidified what I do now, which is I wait for a thing that I really want to do with my PC, and then I upgrade to be able to meet that and maybe exceed it by a small amount. So,
right.
In my head, the reason I'm going to a 40-inch, probably 4K monitor with as good a graphics card as I can, because I actually want to have that rig when Mass Effect Andromeda comes out. That's actually the game.
You realize Mass Effect is not going to be a graphically intensive game.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Things can't run things at 4K anyway. So it's like, it doesn't matter how graphically intensive it is, I won't be able to run it very well.
Right. Like, for instance, the only reason I retooled my PC in general was because Witcher 3 was coming out.
Yeah.
So
100%. That's why I got a R9
I do. I am kind of goals based when it comes to tooling the rig in general, but it just so happens to kind of fall in that pattern.
Right.
There. Yeah. So it's not like I'm consciously being like, I can't buy the 1080 at this point. No, it's much more like, well, I just
There's nothing you want to use it for.
Yeah, I spent $700, you know, tossing a good card and some other fun stuff in there. So, you know, why not use that until I feel like I'm like, oh, shit.
Speaking of games that can use a 1080.
Bam.
Listen to that segue. Battlefield 1 was announced.
You're going to need a 1080 to fight that Seven Nation Army, am I right?
Dude, I'm not going to lie. I love the Glitch Mob. And that is one of my favorite remixes of theirs. So it was like, it was a plus like 5 points on a 10-point scale for me. Because I went from zero interest in any Battlefield game to like, hey, I might pick that up. And that's, I don't know how much of that is just to do with how good the trailer is, but what we're talking about, people at home. Neil, can you describe what the fuck Battlefield 1 is? What is Battlefield 1? This is the first Battlefield, right? They're just remaking the first Battlefield?
Battlefield 1 is, it's actually, it seems like EA and DICE overcompensating for everyone complaining about the future and wanting to toss this as far back in the past as possible. No, I'm kidding. It's basically Battlefield, that game type, essentially set in the World War One setting. So even before World War Two, there was obviously a First World War. They're trying to replicate something that's probably just going to become lots of trench fighting and all sorts of fun in that regard. So I think it'll be interesting to see that as a new theater. We haven't really seen many like World War One games.
Well, I don't know anything about World War One. I know nothing about World War One. All I know is like the Anzacs were there.
Resident World War One expert here. Ask me anything.
All right. Also, Nubra, what the fuck
trailer
is World
has
War
like brought out the worst in like fucking amateur historian bullshit.
It's true.
Right?
It's
just
true.
First of all, like I've straight up avoided the comments, but still on like blogs and like game blogs, etc.
Yeah.
You have people saying, "Oh, they're fucking ruining the memory of the First World War. This is so unrealistic." Horses in World War One? What
that
are they thinking? There were no horses. And it's
Polish,
like
right?
That was the last war with the most major cavalry battles. Shut the fuck up. There's no submachine guns in World War One. The World War One was the first war that used submachine guns. Stop it! Stop! My brain hurts!
Yeah, really, World War One, I think, is as a theater of war, it's just going to be interesting because there are so many of those elements that, like, from the past sort of meeting head-on in the future, like, that was really what defined the war, was the fact that there were so many new inventions, there were so many new tactics, and there were no rules of engagement about that. That's why we see things like mustard gas. That's why we have things like airplanes. Like, what the fuck do you do about an airplane when you just have like a rifle?
That's really funny, you know? Because like,
which honestly is how I felt throughout like Battlefield 4. But that's a unlike.
Well, but I mean, the thing is that I think they're like retooling up to, you know, do World War II, and this is like their perfect stepping stone to sort of move into that age. Because I mean,
how we circle back around
only,
is like fashion and music
it,
where
yeah,
we're
it was
now
only,
back at
no,
World War II.
It was only about like a decade or 15 years ago that World War II games were like the modern warfare gritty kind of games.
Yeah.
But now you don't see fuck all World War II games. There's no game set in World War II, right?
Yeah,
so it's like
way.
A perfect
people
time
are sick
to, it's a perfect time to sort of make that transition because those are really either now future is, you know, like that's where fucking Infinity Ward's going to go and it's going to be terrible, but the past is exciting. Things already happen. You see familiar images. That's what people are interested in. So I think they honestly might have gone too far back in the past. They probably could have just made a World War II game, but hey, who am I to judge? This could be pretty good, to be honest. I'm sort of excited. I'm probably going to get it regardless of whether it's good or not if enough people
I think it's
it.
A very interesting risk on their part, especially but I think it's one that's very calculated because DICE has had some success in sort of I don't want to say I guess I don't know how to describe it, but they did like Vietnam, right? Mm-hmm. They did a Battlefield Vietnam out of Bad Company, an expansion there, and that was met with some really really positive reception. They really absolutely nailed the era, the equipment there. It felt like its own game. On the side. So I think that they're going to do World War One justice, I guess.
Well, that's interesting you say that, because I thought you were talking about Battlefield Vietnam, which came between Battlefield 1942 and Battlefield 2, which is one of the worst game Dice has ever released.
Oh, you were? That's what he was talking. I thought that was what he was talking about as well.
No, this is a Bad Company 2 DLC that was set in Vietnam.
Oh, yes. Right.
But I mean, I doubt they're gonna go for authentic World War One sort of first shooter warfare. Just because it's not first person shooter warfare. Just because it's not gonna work.
That's my question is, like, what is World War One?
Yeah. So there's a game called Verdun. Right, that's on PC. It's like a $25 indie sort of game that's set in World War One. It is literally, it's a sort of push. What do you call it? Like capture the point, kind of going where the front moves back and forth, and then there's a whistle, and then you get out of your trench, and then you rush in, and then you get shot in the head, and you wait to respawn. Right, you get up, and then you rush in, you get hit by artillery, and then you wait to respawn.
Yeah,
and then maybe you get to the trench. And then you start bludgeoning people and bayoneting them with your with your rifle, or you take out like a physical mace, like a giant club, and you club people to death.
Right.
That's not going to work for a AAA release where you have in the sense where it's like where you have this punctuation of excitement and like tense gameplay, but also long stretches of you dying over and over again. Most likely, it's actually probably going to follow the Battlefield 3 and 4 kind of gameplay, open world gameplay, where there's a lot of movement, there's constant action, there's things
vehicles.
You can do. Yeah.
Vehicles are always going to be a big part of it.
Yeah, one interesting about vehicles is they've moved away from you being just a regular soldier and hopping onto an empty vehicle. You literally now spawn into that vehicle and you're restricted to that role for that life. So that's one interesting thing that they've, I think, picked up from Battlefront. Yeah, that's one major change. I mean, there's going to be horses, so you can shoot and kill horses.
you don't need to see that as a positive.
Like, you just got to love that.
Yeah, I mean, most likely it's you're going to have, I guess, the Battle of Hoth in Battlefront, I guess, is the closest example. You had trenches, but for the most part, that wasn't the central focal point of that battle. You had different parts moving back and forth. You had craters that you can hide in. It's probably going to be more like that. I would be shocked if most of the game took place in trenches, even in like the Arab.
I'd be surprised if more than one level happened in a trench.
I've got the entirety of the single player for Battlefield 1 planned right now. So we have to have the D-Day analog where, as you were describing there, Noob, the whistle blow, everyone runs across the trenches, and you're the only one that lives.
Yeah,
right?
Okay, of course.
You, the only one that lives.
It ends with you getting shot, then fades to black. Later on, you find out you live, but yeah.
And then title.
Yes,
right?
Title,
Battle
100%.
Yeah.
bonus points too if you're lying in the muck and the artillery shells are falling and there's like a biplane that like goes over your view.
Absolutely.
Yeah, bonus points there.
Yeah.
And then we have to have the sequence where
he's like a kid who like signs up to the army.
You and everyone are in the trenches and you're waiting, and then all of a sudden mustard gas, and then the gas masks go on, and you have to like fight your way out of the trenches when their mustard gas is going on. They're gonna play that. And then of course we're gonna have to have the Lawrence of Arabia scene where you're on the horse.
Yes.
And you're fighting that.
You think it'd be jumping people to person to person to person? You think it's gonna be jumping through?
Okay, so one thing they've confirmed is that the main protagonist is gonna be an African American soldier. Attached with the American Expeditionary Force.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's very cool.
So it's gonna be sort of like late in the war, I presume, 1917, 1918, when America joined. I think it's questionable to play as an American in a war where America wasn't very involved until the very last.
What are you talking about? They're gonna save everyone and beat the enemy.
Yeah, they're gonna save everyone. I mean, that's not completely historically false. I mean, American troops helped win at the end of the day.
Okay, yep.
All of these young American soldiers, doughboys ready to fight and die.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just strange that they would do that then. Again, Battlefield has often had sequences in the single player where you played multiple things.
Mm-hmm.
Not like a Far Cry to say that that might be the case, and there might just be one main character, but a lot of side characters that tie around the different regions in the game.
It makes me infinitely less interested. It was not like a single character. I didn't play this game, really? So I thought it would be like an actual
single
story.
Player for three was actually pretty good, but for four was kind of fucking awful.
Yeah,
but it's the multiplayer that's the appeal, right? It's that 64 player 32 versus 32 battlefield.
Right.
So I mean, we haven't really seen much other than firstly, that trailer was purely CG. That was not actually in-game gameplay.
Oh, yeah. No.
It could be, though. Yeah. Like, that's not... No, they, it wasn't it that amazing. It
specifically says in the bottom of this... This is, like, what Xbox gameplay could be expected to look like, but is not actual gameplay.
So it's... But I could... Nothing on there was made me go, that's impossible on current shit.
No. But, I mean, like, in terms of what the game could actually be is still fairly different from what it is.
Except that maybe the fire was a bit... I don't know. Actually, no. Fire can look like that in video games now. Anyway, go on.
I mean, considering how good Battlefront looked
in
like the actual game, it would not be a surprise if it looked very good. But yeah, I'm excited.
And honestly, even Battlefield 4, like,
yeah.
It's incredible.
Games look good now.
Frostbite engine, man. So good.
I will talk about this when we get to Uncharted. We'll go. Let's just continue.
It's because games look good on your shitty PS4 with your bad combination.
PC games
have to be stuck to your shitty standards. All right.
I was gonna say we need to move on from this point, but care to say like people weren't mad about Future. We were mad that everyone was doing the same dumb, boring Future. That's like, Future grounded in reality. That's not actually that futuristic, but with robots. Like, fuck you. Like,
it's jump off walls all the time.
Like, if you're gonna do Future, do fucking Future. Like, fuck you. I don't need 2133. Like, look at the kids, like it's as if they're disregarding the fact that there's people who are looking forward to things like Mass Effect or Cyberpunk 2077 or there's games out or Deus Ex. Like there's so many games based in the future that people are ultra looking forward to. It's not because of the future that people don't like what you're doing. It's because you're making bad creative decisions. Like fuck you.
Game looks like shit. Game looks like the same it did in 2007. Fucking game.
Are you talking about Modern Warfare? So, yeah. As a quick, we have two sets of news this week. There's quick news and there's actual news. Let's just hear that quick news point real quick. Modern Warfare is hilarious.
Because people are so angry that it exists. Like, the fact that it's coming out and people have been working to develop it, people are like, what the fuck have you been doing?
I don't know, man. Like, it's at this point, it's like, it may as well be. Oh, fuck. Like, what would you... Something that's always around that no one really cares about, except for the people who really care about it. Like, it's the many people, and that's the majority. It's like fucking... I know what it is. It's like, newspapers. It's like newspapers.
No, but newspapers offer quality content.
worked in news...
No, you're thinking...
Okay, morning television. Like, morning television.
No, it's like... No, like tabloid.
Yes, papers, there you go. Yeah, right? Tabloid. Yes.
TMZ.
The rags. Yes.
This is the fucking TMZ of the video games industry.
The Daily News.
It's bottom of the fucking barrel.
Yeah.
The format has changed in 50 years.
Lowest common denominator.
And it just makes your brain melt at just how it's easy awful.
You don't have to think about what you're doing.
Exactly.
The controls are already familiar. It's a new can of paint.
Yeah.
It's the same paint, but it's a new can.
Same lead
color.
Oh my god! It's like one of these like it's gonna be like everlasting, just like rags. They're just gonna be around forever, and a lot of people are gonna buy them. This is like, I love the whole. It's got the most views of any trailer for Battlefield, and it's got the most dislikes of any trailer for Modern Warfare. That doesn't matter. Like Modern Warfare is gonna outsell Battlefield. Don't be crazy.
Yeah,
don't
like,
be crazy.
The best selling game last year was. Advanced Warfare or whatever, Infinity
what
Warfare
cool.
or whatever that's
yeah,
called.
Right.
Yeah, I don't even know the name. I'm not
know.
Even being facetious. Exactly. I genuinely don't actually know.
Which,
there's one every year, and that one sold the best.
Yeah.
That's it.
It sold more than Witcher 3 and like fucking Mario Maker and fucking everything that's actually good.
Fucking, the second best-selling game after that was Madden 2016 and then Fallout 4. Those were the top three selling.
Forget about those sport games. Those games make bank. Every year.
But those are also
not as much bank as fucking Modern Warfare.
Well, that's the thing. Like, that's what I think. Like, no matter what we do, like, no matter how many boutique movies we watch or what the fuck, in the end, or like, I could be reading Al Jazeera all day, but it doesn't matter because fucking the rags and the sports magazines are going to sell them so way more, like, but always.
The thing is, like, even those sports games have complex mechanics, like making your own league. Yeah, it's like making your own league, having players, trading players, etc. There's like multiple layers.
Yeah.
Call of Duty still remains to be.
Well, Call of Duty still has like prestiging and shooting face. And like fucking perks and all that kind of stuff.
You've reset your perks. Like, holy shit.
I'm not saying that I find it interesting. I'm just saying it's still a video game. It's got video game ass video game things.
I don't abide by the idea that you should shit on Call of Duty because it's worth shitting on. It's boring. If they made a different thing, I wouldn't care so much. But it's just the
same. I think that's why zombies is always like kind of a breath of fresh air. You're like, oh, thank God, at least they did that.
Yeah, at least it is something slightly different.
At least zombies happened.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
for a couple times in there. Yeah. Like, oh, thank God.
So moving on, that was a quick piece of news. Back to another maybe longer piece of news. Nintendo, Neil,
how much have we shit on Nintendo in the last couple weeks?
It's pretty much every episode. Incredible. I love it because every episode we have, they then like just
there's
between
disappointing
episodes,
Nintendo news. Yeah.
I got my shit bucket right here.
It's so like Neil, I don't know if I asked you this because I'm not sure if we talked about Nintendo last time you were on. What's your stance on Nintendo?
I've never owned a Nintendo console. All my friends own it, and they laugh at me whenever I try to play Super Smash Brothers.
You can join us on the hate train. You can join us.
I don't have it in me anymore. I don't have it in me. I don't have it. It's just. I don't care.
What did they do this time?
Okay.
What did they do this time?
So the last time we talked, they announced they wouldn't be talking about the NX till later this year after E3. So the NX is going to be at an E3 before it releases, which is fucking nuts. Secondly, Zelda, which is the only game many people bought a Wii U for, is coming to NX as well, so you may as well not have bought a Wii U. The only one they're showing at E3 is the Wii U version of Zelda, so the only thing they're bringing to the biggest fucking conference in the world is the shit version of the game that people want to see. And now they announced, and people are like, okay, that's fine, like, all that really matters is the press conference anyway. You just have a Nintendo Direct and you tell us what 3DS game is coming out. So this between weeks, like pretty much just after we finished last recording, they announced that, nope, they're not going to be doing a Nintendo Direct press conference equivalent. There's going to be nothing.
Really?
There's going to be nothing at E3 except for a single Nintendo Treehouse, which is like they may as well be their PR firm like, at this point. Streaming out them playing Zelda for one day, and that's it. That's the entirety of what they're bringing to E3 this year.
Wow. So, yeah, that's pretty paltry.
That's
I don't know, like every time I look at the Wii U just over the years, I've never seen a game that I would buy that console for. Like when I was making console purchasing decisions for the new for this current generation, I knew that like Destiny before we all knew what Destiny would become was coming for PS4. Mm-hmm. And I knew that Bloodborne was going to come for PS4.
Nice.
And those were all games that I wanted to jump on the train for. And I also knew that eventually there'd be a remake for games like Journey and the Uncharted series. And that was another thing to invest in.
Nice.
But within Nintendo, I mean, I'm not a Mario Kart person. I'm not a Smash Brothers person. And then what was it? You know, I do like their art style for some of
their
things,
but I think that's my big takeaway. I don't like their art style.
Yeah, and that's totally understandable.
Yeah,
I would never buy the console for the,
I have nothing,
for the games.
Like the more I shit on Nintendo, the more I realize I don't actually have anything against Nintendo. Like
they just make bad choices, and it's hilarious. It's just frustrating to watch.
It's fun making fun of dumb people. That's just the sum total of it,
no,
right?
It's a train wreck. It's actually watching like a dude trying to like a fat guy on a trampoline and the trampoline collapsing and him falling over. That's like the equivalent. That's what Nintendo is. Nintendo is the fat guy on the trampoline.
It's like no matter what.
I do think it's really.
Oh, go on. Go
I
on,
do
go
think
on.
It's really interesting though how over the years Nintendo has steadily become sort of separate from the. The whole console war between Microsoft and Sony, they've successfully. It's like they've accidentally extracted themselves from the only argument.
No, but
that
that's
matters.
By virtue of that's by virtue like, of the fact that they're no longer fucking competitive, right?
Right.
In the sense, like, oh, it's like Switzerland did a good job not fighting in the Second World War. Mm-hmm. It's just because if they fought in the Second World War, they would have been fucking crushed. It has less to do with the. the fact that they're good at maneuvering around these big powers is like they have no ability to take part in a console war because they don't have a console that could actually compete, nor do they have the games on the console that are worth, you know, hitting heavy like a Destiny or a Halo.
Like, here's the thing, like, because it doesn't, it's purely their fault because, like, like, for example, the biggest games I play this year, like, I've written down every game I've played to completion this year. So you have Firewatch, The Witness, Street Fighter V, which doesn't really count for anything. XCOM 2, Fire Emblem Fates, which is on a Nintendo platform, but the other two are Dark Souls 3 and fucking Uncharted 4. Like, of those seven games, one was on a Nintendo system. It wasn't even, like, it's Fire Emblem, so fair enough. And I'm going to talk about it in a second.
No, but also,
but everything else
the thing is,
wasn't even on a Nintendo system. Like, every game people care about isn't on Nintendo systems. Doom came out this week, and people love it. No, it's never going to be a Nintendo system. So,
but like, even the handheld fact is, like, I think they're competitive in the handheld market.
I love their
but
handhelds.
That's completely separate from, like,
the larger gaming community.
The larger gaming market.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't even count that, to be honest.
It's a vast subset.
That could compete, on a scale like a Destiny or a Halo.
It's funny though because like all the Nintendo sort of IPs, right? Those are it's weird to say, but they're almost technically exclusives because they only come out for Nintendo systems. But the problem is that no one cares about them because they're usually rehashes.
Yeah.
Or in the case of like Fire Emblem, which, you know, and I will recognize as a good game.
Yeah.
A lot of people love that game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just the next iteration. It's nothing new or novel.
Well, it was straight out worse than Fire Emblem, the last Fire Emblem games, in my opinion.
I should say rather it's expected.
Right.
It's expected of Nintendo to continue using that franchise.
Nintendo doesn't take risks.
Yeah.
And that's
Like,
well, the only risk they took recently was Splatoon, and that was a massive success, and they continued to stop taking risks.
Oh, actually, I should amend my statement. I would, if I made, like, a little bit more money than I do now, I would probably look into buying a used Wii and playing Splatoon, because, that game looks awesome.
That only looks cool. And so I was like, well, I wouldn't, but that's because fuck Squid people, but I'd probably get one for Bayonetta. At a minimum, and so
Bayonetta probably.
Yeah, so it's like
those are two good arguments for getting a Wii U. But
yeah, I don't hate Nintendo. They just keep doing things that make me think that they just don't give a shit about the audience, and that's just almost.
I hate Nintendo.
That's fair. That's fair. I'm not gonna say
I really dislike their YouTube policy. They don't do themselves any favors with their fans.
No, but like the fact that like Bayonetta and Splatoon are the reasons we want to get Nintendo, it speaks for me more than the fact that I just wish those were on other platforms and I could play those games. 100%. But because Nintendo exists, that can't be the case.
I dislike their controllers too. I've never enjoyed.
Oh, fuck, I hate their controllers.
They're not made for playing video
games.
Fuck me.
Every time. So the Wirecard recently announced that the PS4 control is the best control for PC. And I think, it's like it's got some on Windows 10. It definitely has some driver issues. Windows 7, I'd actually get behind them on that one, but Windows 10, and the actual answer is no. The Xbox One Elite control is good, but that's $200, so like you can't really tell everyone to get that. But in every thread that you ever mention any controller ever fucking made, someone will go, "Oh man, the Wii U Classic controller is like the best controller in the world." And I was like, that is a plasticky piece of garbage and is just slightly different to an Xbox 360 controller. Like, fuck you. May as well be, it's just the same shape as an Xbox 360 controller with the analog sticks on top, which is the place you don't want them. Oh, fuck. Fuck you. This is always.
You know why it's the best controller?
Those are the
world?
Same people that it's are because saying they're the only controller.
It's the only good control for
that
system.
They ever learned how to play Smash on.
It's
true.
God,
like,
people.
Everyone that I know that plays Smash, they all have their favorite controller.
Mm-hmm.
And even if there's one controller that doesn't kill your hands after using it for hours, or one that just has better sensible button placement, it always comes down to which one they learned on.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
That's the worst
and that's
thing.
Okay.
That's the worst thing.
It's like, fuck you.
But it's kind of like, oh man, can we make that controller that you like better? Like,
yeah. It's like,
can we?
At a minimum, like, can we just make it out of something that isn't shitty cheap plastic? Like, for fuck's sake.
Right.
Anyway.
That's different. So it's garbage.
I think I've talked about the Xbox One Elite controller like almost every episode since I got it. I love that thing. That thing's great.
I need to
buy one of those.
It's totally worth it.
Yeah.
The
I've been thinking about getting another Hotas bottle and stick.
Nice.
I've been playing a lot more Elite lately.
Nice.
So I have a pretty good one right now, but it's one of those things that, like, I'm kind of willing to throw money at it, even though it's only for one game. I don't know, because I just had to win that game.
But anyway, it's yeah. Let's see. All right, so we need to get this moving.
Are we gonna get on the anger train? We're about to get on the anger train.
We should do that last. We should do that last.
Okay.
All right. So the Assassin's Creed movie trailer came out.
Yes.
That was funny.
Yeah. Random Kanye. How do you like that? We're in a very interesting period.
Was that Kanye? I couldn't tell what the fuck it was. Just some dude saying three words into a microphone at some point during the trailer, and that's right. Music choice, I think, was garbage. But actual, like, visual presentation, like, you can't. Oh, what do you expect from an Assassin's Creed game?
What the fuck? Are you looking? Oh my god! I'm looking at the CG of this battle, and it looks like in-game footage right now.
Yeah.
Oh Jesus!
You know, I thought at least the costuming looked good. I think Fassbender looked good. Right.
Well, I think the costuming
looks Middle Eastern Crusader ambient. I think that's what I'll call it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Ambient Crusader.
Here's my problem with it, right? Because people who made the X-Men movies realized that things that work in a comic book, like, don't necessarily work when real people are wearing those clothing on a big screen. So, like, Wolverine, let's just put him in leathers, maybe, rather than having him wear a blue and fucking yellow jumpsuit. Alright, let's make that one fucking concession to the modern audience that maybe they don't want to see someone running around in a fucking jumpsuit. And so, like, when you look at the Assassin's Creed, like, thing, it's like, yes, that's a iconic kind of uniform, but it's like kind of uniform in the same way that Wolverine's like kind of uniform. It's not like it can't be changed. It can't be realized. It can't be, like, made more fitting to an actual thing. So, like, the whole idea with it and the reason it was so iconic was because of that first trailer for the first Assassin's Creed of a dude melting into this, like, this group of clergy because he's wearing that really sweet, like, Assassin's Creed 1 garb, right?
Right.
Ever since then, it was just that garb because it became iconic. It never made sense in almost any game past there. It's like, who's the assassin? It's the one dude with a fucking hooded cowl over there. Like, fuck. Like, no one else is wearing one.
It's that guy.
Fucking Venice.
That dude, yeah, with the side cape. Like, it's like fuck.
Is that dude?
Can you see him?
Like, fuck you.
The fucking assassin. Yeah.
Like, he has wrist blades on, for Christ's sake. So it's like.
Yeah. No, the assassins in the Assassin's Creed universe are anything but subtle, for sure. Yeah. It's I like that you brought up that costuming problem because it's the same problem I have with why Jedi wear robes.
Right.
Yep. Everybody wears robes in the Star Wars universe.
Is because the only Jedi wear robes. Is because Obi-Wan wore robes because he's from a desert planet.
Yes.
Like, that's the only reason. That's that. Otherwise, I have no business wearing robes.
Yeah.
At all.
They'd just be wearing their clothes. Why a militaristic uniform.
A movie out of this fucking game? You think they try to make a movie out of a game with, like, good story, but it's like them trying to make a movie out of, like, Call of Duty. It's just because it's a popular game franchise. Yes. Doesn't mean it should be.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, Assassin's Creed 1 actually did have a good story. Just straight up.
Not if you enjoyed history or liked sense.
Oh yeah, well, no, Noob, we've established that your particular views on anything that remotely touches history, even remotely, are very particular. But, like, for the rest of us who are fine with some craziness
but
in our,
like,
history.
It's like it's, Dan Brown-esque, like,
yes,
fucking Da Vinci Code.
And it's ridiculous. Books are entertaining. Their books are entertaining.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard in my life.
I'm not saying they're particularly great. They're not like fucking Game of Thrones.
They're,
like,
oh my god.
That's not even saying Game of Thrones is particularly great.
I don't think it's quite. I think certain elements of Assassin's Creed are in the Dan Brown, especially the more mystical aspects are definitely in the Dan Brown.
Like, if you talk about anything past, like, Assassin's Creed 2, the end of Assassin's Creed 2 Brotherhood, it's all Dan Brown territory.
In the first two games, one and two, grounded. I think the core gameplay loop is still grounded enough in the immersion of the time and place enough.
Yeah.
and it doesn't betray too many historical problems.
Yeah.
It's only when it's like, Athena gave me the apple. Yeah.
Like the craziness. Like,
for me, if this is like classic Hitman, where it's like, this is a super cool game, it's a super cool idea for a game,
yeah.
Wouldn't it be a cool idea if we turn this into a movie? The answer is no. It's not a good idea to turn this into a movie.
I think it would be
there's
fine.
Not enough elements that holds it into sort of like a narrative framework, because it has to be a good narrative. It has to have interesting characters. None of those
but that's,
things.
That's the deal. Like, that's the problem with this. It's not that it doesn't have a good narrative, because it could. Because like when people have that argument, though, the movie I always remember in recent past is what if I, Live, Die, Repeat. What the fuck? Edge of Tomorrow, right?
I loved Edge of Tomorrow.
That's not based off of a game.
No,
that's
it's not. But like, it's think of the premise.
Story.
Think of the premise.
I have
though.
That manga.
It is like a paper thin premise, like nothing to it, right?
But I mean, it exists on sort of a medium that is purely based on narrative and nothing else, right?
Yeah, but like the what essentially we're talking about the same thing though, like a paper thin premise, like a dude goes into the past, gets superpowers because he relives his ancestors' memories, versus dude who just repeats the same day over and over again. It's like one slightly more complex, sure, but like in the thing you said before is the most important part. That that manga looks amazing. All You Need Is Kill. It looks fantastic.
Yeah, it's really good.
That's way thicker than I thought.
The movie Edge of Tomorrow was actually very faithful, I think, to the original plot and the idea.
Right. Yeah, so it's like it's awesome. What matters is the characters. What matters is,
I don't think they're,
and that's what they failed. Yeah, that's what they failed.
I don't think Assassin's Creed.
There was like a million assassins on screen, so you immediately lose all interest on like their order, because it's like, unless you're like talking about like some, like if this was just, if this whole thing was just him and never showed like any other assassin, and this, you know what they should have done? They should have just made the first Assassin's Creed trailer in real life. That's it. Nothing else. Yeah. One dude parkouring through an ancient city and then melts into and then assassinated fool and then melts into a crowd of clergy. Nice music. Maybe some of the modern day stuff. That's it.
There needs to be plot. There needs to be plot in the movie trailer.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. But
the movie's entire pacing is going to be really hampered too by...
do you guys remember the World of Warcraft movie?
Sorry.
Oh god, I keep forgetting that's coming out.
That first trailer was pretty good. That first trailer was actually not bad.
Oh yeah.
As a person who didn't like
it,
I have zero interest in Warcraft. So to me, it's just like, oh, it's a fantasy movie. Sure, it's a fantasy movie, and the graphics seem all right. That's the grand sum of my takeaway from that trailer, the first one. Isn't Christian Bale in it? Who's the main dude?
What?
I don't even know.
In which one?
The main dude, like human, is like a big actor, relatively big.
Or World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. All right. So that's the Assassin's Creed movie trailer stuff. Okay. So here's some cool other relatively movie related stuff. Respawn's doing a Star Wars game.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do we know anything about
nothing
setting?
We know nothing about it. We know nothing about it at all. That's just I should have put this in the quick news segment. This is all we've got. Respawn's making a Star Wars game. The more interesting news is that they're aiming Amy Hennig's game, so the ex-Uncharted lady from Naughty Dog. Her game's going to be coming out like 2019. It's going to be like ages away, 2018, 2019. So if anything, hey, we're probably going to get a Star Wars shooter, I guess, because that's what Respawn does, right?
But another Star Wars shooter.
Yeah, we're going to get another Star Wars shooter, and fucking Amy Hennig's game's getting delayed. That's essentially all we've gotten from that. Any takeaways there before we move on?
If it's anything like the canceled Star Wars 1313, I think I'll be interested at least.
Oh, it actually did look pretty cool.
Yeah,
I mean,
they've
announced it's going to be third person, which is, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's all right. I don't know.
Do you trust them making a third person game? Respawn?
Titanfall is not a third person game.
No. Well, it's third person when you're in Titan, aren't you? Oh, no, it's not, is it? No. You see yourself third person for a second when you eject, don't you? Or something. The Titan from outside when you eject.
I don't think you ever see yourself in third person.
No, I don't think so. I don't know.
So, no, I don't trust them as a third person game. That's my takeaway. But then again, like,
they better not be remaking any Jedi Knight, Jedi Outcast games, which I don't think they will because those are no longer in the canon.
Right.
Kyle Katarn.
I mean, rest in peace. I mean, I trust them in the sense that I don't doubt they're going to make a bad shooter, because Titanfall was actually a good shooter. Just for some reason, everybody stopped playing it.
Mm.
But like, again, these are like the classic Call of Duty guys, right? Before they, for all that shit happened. The
last amazing game they made was Modern Warfare 2, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I believe so.
So
that's, I think the, like, the Relic Entertainment happened in like 2010. So right after Modern Warfare 2, in fact.
Mm.
So there you go.
Before
everything turned to shit, they made.
This is, I'm actually betting this is probably going to be like a Rogue One spinoff or something. I actually think they would serve themselves.
I think it's definitely going to be a movie spinoff. It will definitely be a movie spinoff. Yeah.
Oh man, it's kind of disappointing.
I don't know. Like,
good.
The extended universe stuff that they're setting up now. Like, I agree, it's disappointing if they use the same characters and stuff. But the extended movie stuff they're setting up now actually seems more interesting than most of the Star Wars stuff that's come before it. So I'm not.
To be fair, Rogue One goes back in time. It's between episode 3 and 4.
Yeah,
I've got high hopes for Rogue One. I think it'll be much more interesting than The Force Awakens. To be honest,
I really like The Force Awakens. So
I really like The Force Awakens.
Yeah,
I was not impressed with anything I saw with Rogue One. Actually,
I've got my problems with Force Awakens, but I'll keep those to myself for now.
That's fine. No, that movie has problems. Like, I'll probably agree with most of your issues. I like
Force Awakens.
Yeah,
though. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I definitely enjoyed my time in the theater, but
I've agreed with pretty much every piece of criticism I've heard about that movie, except for like people who criticized the acting. I think the acting was on point. So like, all right. So, and with that, like after last episode, and apparently this is old news. It wasn't old news to me when I was looking through news yesterday. Also on the Star Wars tip, going back in times in the Star Wars universe, there's gonna be a fucking Han Solo prequel movie coming out. What the fuck?
I fucking hate prequels.
What the fuck, man? Haven't we learned about prequels now? Like, Rogue One has like the free pass of being something we've never seen before.
New characters.
Yeah,
not entirely new characters. This ain't Star Wars or this ain't fucking Star Trek. You can't just say it's in a different universe because it's not. It's in the Star Wars universe.
What do they gain by like showing us Han Solo meeting Chewie? Like, does anyone gain from that? It's like,
a giant nostalgia boner.
What they gain is hundreds of millions of dollars in nostalgia. Yeah. They're cashing in on hundreds of million dollars.
Spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it, because you're crazy. But Han Solo is dead now.
Oh no.
So now we can desecrate his corpse by showing you all the stuff he did when he was a teenager.
He's still warm corpse. Is it still fucking cooling after being?
He's only warm because he had a lightsaber shoved through.
That's
his chest.
True. Fuck. How do you like the new actor though? I think he's a good pick.
I haven't seen him on chat. I haven't seen any of the movies.
No.
I want to see Hail Caesar, but I haven't seen that.
I have no interest in Hail Caesar. Like.
Really? You don't like the Coen brothers?
No. Pretty much. Thurbleton's coming back soon. Oh, yeah. For people at home, Thurbleton had to tap out. Oh, we said that. And he's going to be coming back soon.
Yeah, he has a virus.
Moving on. Because there's not much I have to say about that.
Virus. Like, he's sick and dying.
Some quick news. Let's just hit some quick news again before pumping back to big news. Mass Effect was the delay till 2017 has been confirmed. So that's a 2017 game now. Probably going to be early 2017. I am disappointed, but whatever, take your time. I'm fine with that. Neil, like you nodded your head. Like any further thoughts on them? They should take their time.
Yeah, I agree with that statement. I think the more developers identify places where they need to delay their games, the better off we're going to be.
Absolutely.
As an industry.
Yeah. Netflix, non-game news. Netflix announced this is going to be a fucking Punisher spinoff series. Have you guys seen Daredevil?
No, I hope it's a little very, very grim and dark, because that's what Punisher should be.
Oh, man.
Because if they do like another Punisher thing where it's like Marvel characters treat it like a fucking children's show,
This season of Daredevil with, hey, Thurbleton's back, what's up? This season of Daredevil may as well have been a season of the Punisher for the first four episodes, because essentially just introducing the character of the Punisher. And it was fucking awesome. It was so, like, it was the new season of Daredevil. Everything in, like, about Daredevil in it is the weakest part of this season.
That's what I've been hearing. Is that, is that Daredevil in general has been kind of going down the tubes since the
pretty
first
much.
Season kind of exploded out.
Exactly. Like, it's, but they have the almost a DC problem where they introduced Elektra and Punisher in this Daredevil season. Like, why the fuck who thought that was a good plan? Where you just eating this guy's screen time with other characters that need to be built from scratch rather than just, like, developing him as a thing. The one minute scene at the end of this whole season for Daredevil, which I won't spoil, does more character building than the rest of the whole fucking season for his character. It's garbage.
Wow.
But the first four episodes of Punisher, and this guy's a good fucking Punisher. Like, I'm actually legitimately excited about this Punisher spinoff.
Quick news.
Yep, quick news.
Battlefront 2 also is coming out in 2017.
2017? Okay, so we're not getting a Star Wars game this year? That's probably a good thing. I'm happy with that. So this
it would be fucking shocking if Battlefront also came out this year. I'll say that. If the new Battlefront came out the next year after Battlefront came out, that would be fucked up. And I'm glad.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's like timing it with Rogue One, maybe, but I imagine that's something where they'll want to tie that in with. Yeah. I think the next episode 8 is next year, probably. Right?
Rogue One's this year, episode 8 next year. Yeah.
It's probably going to tie that in. It was like the same one map that's relevant or something. I don't know.
Probably my biggest news personally for me this week is Phoenix Wright is actually coming to the West. I like how no one's surprised that this is my big thing. I love Phoenix Wright. It is a fantastic, dumb series, and the anime is terrible, supposedly, but I'm happy to have...
People are mad about the anime because it's exactly like the game.
Yeah.
It's like slavishly...
Too much like the game.
Slavishly accurate to the game, yeah.
Yeah, it's too much
like the game. I think that's fine. What else are you going to do with it?
Exactly. Like, fuck it. Fuck it. I'm happy to relive those moments.
Whatever. Put it on the screen.
Like, it's like, he talks to him as if he doesn't know how to be an attorney. Like, yeah, it's because in the first game, he doesn't know how to fucking be an attorney. It's fucking hilarious. I love that. I love that scene. Anyway, so really happy about that. Get me set in Karain Village. So it's going to be the annoying mystical stuff, which I've never liked, but I don't care. Like, it's going to be a Phoenix Wright game. I'm happy. It's my favorite kind of puzzle solving, which isn't like, putting this thing and this other thing to make these things line up, or like, stand in this place, the fucking witness. It's just like, no, this is a logic puzzle. These are disparate facts and you have to put them together in a way that makes sense. Like Sherlock Holmes, which is actually probably my favorite puzzle game of the last year. Again, that's a piece of quick news. So going back to normal news for the last two news items, the second last news item this week is, someone else put this on this list. Can someone tell me why Disney Infinity is on this list?
Because Disney out of the blue decided to shut down a whole studio that's been around since the Midway days.
Does it actually mean anything? I know.
I don't think it's the same. I mean, like,
studio
they went from
are
making
bad,
cool.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it means a thing of that, like, the Toys to Life market is supposedly very big. It doesn't really mean much.
No.
It doesn't mean much. But, yeah. Like,
like,
I got some nephews.
Avalanche
they really
software.
Like that Disney Infinity game.
Yeah, like, it's sad that there's not going to be a Disney Infinity game for kids. I agree there. And Johnny V, I agree. Like, for people at home, our Google Doc doesn't say Disney Infinity canceled by Disney. And the thing show, like, the studio closed. It just says RIP Johnny V. John Vignacchi, fucking close to our hearts as Giant Bomb fans.
He's not dead.
He may as well be dead. Like, it's
he's unemployed.
No. Like,
who's going to hire him now?
Like, no, anyone. He's actually really good at what he does. Like, but yeah, so Disney Infinity has been, sorry, Disney in general is getting out of the games publishing business. That's probably the biggest news from here. Not necessarily because they closed down Disney Infinity and closed down their developer, but because that means they're going to be outsourcing all their Disney games from here on forward, which I think is a good
thing. Which is not shocking. Yeah, like, yeah. I think they've learned with, like, by delving into the games franchise is that it's better to leave game making to the people, to like the developers and the publishers that do it best.
Yeah.
Rather than make your franchise into a single game called Disney Infinity and right. then have it slowly wither away.
Yeah. And it's right. weird because, like, you're right. Like, they have a million franchises, and yet instead of making a bunch of different games, they made one game for all of them. And I don't know if I think that kind of was half the reason it didn't pan out. Because apparently it's a lost leader. Like, who would have thought that the thing you buy, like, overexpensive DLC for, which is essentially these toys, that's essentially what they are, the DLC in physical form, would be a lost leader. Like, I had no idea. Yeah. Yeah. Like there was, Does anyone here? Did anyone here ever actually buy like a Skylander or everyone shaking their heads? No one.
I mean, I bought Disney Infinity for my nephews, and they really liked it.
Right.
Yeah. And like my sister and her brother in law, like they got a bunch of the older series, I guess. Like this is like Disney Infinity 4.0 or 3.0 or something was right. what I got them.
And yeah.
They bought a bunch of the older ones at GameSpot for like $5 a pop. And they seem to be having fun with it,
man.
But that won't be for long, I guess.
Aww.
Nope.
Yeah, I feel really bad for Brandon Jones. Brandon Jones, who's of Easy Allies fame, which we've brought up here before, is like the one man on the internet that I've ever seen like actually giving a fucking shit about, like really giving a shit about Disney Infinity. Like he's a guy who's like his project for like the last year and a half has been to build block by block Disneyland inside Disney Infinity. Like he's with every Disney Infinity release, he looks at the new, like there's like, oh, there's these bins. Like, I'm not fucking with you. There's these bins from Disneyland, and they finally put the bins from Disneyland in Disney Infinity. So he replaces all the bins in his fake Disneyland with the bins from real Disneyland. And he loves that shit. And like he has like a 25 minute long video on Easy Allies of him just going, he's just reaction to this closing. And like, I feel for you. Like, I feel for the people who care about this. I'm just saying, like, in the larger scheme of gaming, like with the other stuff going on, that this isn't actually, it's not surprising that it's closing down because that's just kind of the world we live in now. The offshoot from that will probably be that we have a bunch of talented developers now starting their own independent studios, which is probably a good thing. So yeah, like I don't have a massive issue with it. Talented people will always find work. I might be sounding too hopeful saying that, but that's just kind of my stance. Finally, the last piece of news, and I left it for last only because like we were negative about Nintendo and I need some space between these two. So like Noobarama, you linked me a couple days ago to what was fucking happening. Can you describe to me the situation that's evolving at Oculus today?
Let me find the tweet. I'm opening up my Chrome.
It was like a week
I'm
ago,
typing
whatever,
in.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but right now I am typing up Palmer Luckey onto my Google search bar, and I find his Twitter on the second thing.
Have we always done this before on this podcast?
I scroll down to his tweet, and he tweets, May 2nd, good news for pre-orders. Best case scenario given the situation, expanding retail after we catch up will be huge. So first off, that's incredibly vague, and that doesn't mean anything, right?
Well, 140 characters.
No, and then it clicks, yeah, you click the blog. You click the blog link that he finds out, and he's like, oh, that's great. You know all of those people that orders 3 minutes after the pre-orders launched? Those people are still not getting their pre-orders. Sorry. They're no longer getting it by expedited airmail or whatever faster mail service. They're now getting regular ground mail.
Right.
That was also part of the blog. But more importantly, Oculus Rift is going to be retailing at Best Buy on select locations starting...
And Amazon.
May 7th. And Amazon, May 7th. So I know you guys ordered these products 6 minutes after we started selling them. I know you haven't gotten them, and I know you have no fucking information on when you're going to get them, but we are selling them at Best Buy. And also, we've totally made it okay, because if you pick one up at Best Buy and then you show us the receipt, then we'll cancel your pre-order for you.
What? Oh my
fuck
God.
You! You bought an Oculus Rift, you fucking idiot! And I think that's the last. Yeah, that's the last sentence of the blog. They just say "fuck you" to their.
ha ha ha! Yes. Fuck you, you idiot. Is what they say.
And if that wasn't enough, I'm going to type in Palmer Luckey. Reddit this time. Reddit. And then there's this giant thread on Reddit where, for some strange reason, and I can't fathom why, people were really unhappy about the fact that it was hitting retail before anything was happening regarding shipping for existing pre-orders. So this is a Reddit post that links to another older Twitter from April 25th of 2016. I prefer production that can keep up with demand, but I much prefer shortages to the opposite problem. No burying rifts in the desert landfills. So he's trying to say that it's a good thing that there are shortages, because it would be super bad if they had a lot of rifts that weren't selling. So everything that's happening is all a part of the plan. Everything is okay. Now go back and look at your email as your emails fill up with pre-order information. That's not happening. So,
wow.
What's really great is that he made a series of passive aggressive
posts on Reddit, yeah,
on this thread, because apparently people weren't appreciative of of the hard work that Palmer Luckey was putting out and how this is all a part of this grand scheme. Judging from the comments in this thread, people seem to have already forgotten that we were sold out till summer, even before the component shortage pushed some people further out. Does anyone else remember January 6th shitstorm? Pepperidge Farms remembers, and that has negative 908 karma on that post. And then somebody like epically replies.
Yes,
like,
does an epic reply.
His quotes.
Like one of the, and, like, one of the true internet replies where exactly. Batman says someone is wrong on the internet and just like fucking dominates. Just like 18 links to like previous Palmer Luckey articles. Yeah, go on. Sorry.
Yeah, on how like does anyone, and then he quotes like his, does anyone else remember whatever? And then remember how you said you were going to scale up production to meet demand? Pepperidge Farms remembers. And it's just like 20 posts of that, of him just being called out on his bullshit.
Different bullshit.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's gorgeous.
And then he's fucking, nice job of slicing and dicing out of context quotes to mean something totally different, particularly cutting out parts of my retail quote where I make the situation very clear. And then some like crazy fanboy like response, like, you know, like calling out Vive as if that was the problem here. Like, they're not comparing Vive to Oculus, they're just calling out how he's lying. And then he replies to that fanboy, you're an insufferable fanboy sometimes, but this is a pretty great post. Let wow. these comments voyage as deep as the haters take us. I hear the water gets saltier the deeper we go. Do you want someone like this representing your company? I would literally lock him up in a room, right? In a fucking abandoned school in Left Alone or whatever that game you were playing Thurb. And just not let him speak for my company, because this guy is like truly poisonous. And this, doesn't understand
this stuff
how
just
angry
makes me shrug
are.
And go, this is what happens when you have a nerd running your company. And
so basically, just to sum it up, because I basically told this in like a narrative format, it's like they are ignoring the fact that there's a huge backlog of pre-orders, and they're just going ahead with limited retail sales.
Yeah.
Because, and their solution to sort of people complaining about the fact that, you know, people are still not getting their rifts, or not even getting the sign of when they might come, is, don't worry, you can go buy them at the Best Buy and also show us your receipt and we'll cancel your pre-order for you. And it's just shocking. It's kind of actually mind-boggling how... It's not even... This is competent.
It's not indefensible. It's indefensible.
Yeah. It's like, it's not incompetence. It's just genuine, like, contempt for your fucking customers that you go this far and you know it's gonna make them furious, and your response is, well, go and fucking pick it up, dumbass.
Because
it's
like,
easy.
The obvious response is, and this is the obvious response, is like, okay, no, these deals were made like fucking 6 months or, sorry, 2 years ago probably. Like the Amazon and retail deal was made a long time ago, and these companies are big ass companies that are like not really comparable size to Facebook, but they're big companies that actually matter in the retail industry. And the sales of packaged goods industry. And you don't really want to piss them off and like renege on deals you've made with them. But like, this isn't the first time a piece of hardware has been delayed to retail. Like, this is like almost like there are things get delayed and people aren't surprised when they're delayed. You can't tell me that Oculus Rift, backed by Facebook, couldn't go to Amazon going, hey, we might take like another 6 months on this one. Chill. It's not like you're never going to fucking deliver shit to Amazon ever. It's not like you're never going to go fucking give shit to Best Buy ever. You can remake business like relationships because, hey, it's business. In the end, it just comes down to money. People will work with you because you have something people want. You have something people clearly want. So it's like, at no level does it actually make sense. It's unless they're legally committed by some process, like to have delivered on these dates, they have no like leg to stand on morally or like even like logically to stand on. So it's like, yeah, the only thing I could say is like maybe they have some like binding contract that forced them to do this, but I strongly doubt it.
And what's most frustrating is it's one thing if this was like, you know, you ordered like in May, like a month later, and you're mm-hmm. getting it late.
Yeah.
No, this is straight up people ordering the first day, fucking Kickstarter backers who yeah. still have, and it's not, they're not getting it yet. It's, they have yet to get an email saying when they might get it, like a specific date or like a specific week.
Right.
And it's sort of like that sort of complete lack of care or mm-hmm. like any sort of sense of responsibility as yeah. like a company. Is really shocking. That's yeah, actually pretty shocking.
It's too far. It's yeah. something that is like, again, like when Oculus actually happened and was no longer something that didn't exist, it was like an ethereal object. The like yeah. glitter came off the fairy and you're like, oh no, you're a hag. Like this is some horrible monstrosity that's been created by people who don't actually know how to run a company, and we don't want anything to do with this. On the other side of this, like, though, we need to move on because we're running deep.
Wait, but like, just quickly, like, their PR solution was to have Palmer Luckey tweet and also go on Reddit and be a total fucking jackass.
I have no idea, like, if that's linked to their yeah. PR. I don't know if anyone has reins on that man. I don't know if, like, what they think of that in the company.
No, they have no PR, period.
If I was John Carmack right now, I'd be like, you know what? I'm just going to go work for Valve.
John Carmack's fucking moved on. He's on Gear 24/7. He has no.
But still, like, linked to the same company, right? They're still all Oculus, right? I'd just leave if I was him. I would be like him and like the guys who actually matter to that company, like John Carmack and I forget the other guy's name, the chief scientist. I would be just those two and look at each other and go, let's just fucking get off and start our own thing and then work with like a third party like Samsung and just do that. And then just do it. I'd just do that if I was them. But anyway.
Just quick aside. Mm-hmm. Friend of the show, Shinboy, still has not gotten his Oculus Rift.
Oh my God. Yeah. I remember.
When did he order? Was it
one of the pre-orders? He is expected to get his end of this month, start of June.
Very specific.
So yeah,
he
might get delayed. He doesn't know.
Nice.
Most likely, because they're constantly being pushed back, and the way they're getting their shipment has completely changed as well. Yep. So
like the other side of this story, and the thing I didn't put in the Google Doc is another company in a very similar situation is taking this a very different way. I don't know if you guys saw this news this week, but Samsung, HTC with the Vive has actually stopped all orders now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it happened today or yesterday. They're stopping taking orders for the HTC Vive, and on their, I think it's some like really like awesome statement. Like when you try to order it now, it brings up like this. It's not an error message, but this like a window, and it says something like, "Huh, that's unexpected." And like under it, it was like these sold way more than we thought they would. We're closing pre-orders till we know we can meet demand, and that's it. And they're fulfilling their shipments. They're going to keep rolling them out. They're just doing what a real motherfucking manufacturer does and controlling the supply and demand. And that's fantastic. That's what they should do.
Not just letting demand completely increase as your supply just is nil because you don't know how to run a company.
Yeah. And that's like, that's just a pure counterpoint. There's nothing I can really say beyond like, that's classy. Do it that way. Like, it's people have shown you. Oculus, you did not make the first consumer electronics product ever made. I'm sorry. I don't know how to break this to you, but you're not the first person who's ridden this radio. Other people have done it before you, and all you needed to do is look at how they did it and do it that way. And you chose not to. So
Fuck Oculus me. Should get together with Nintendo and develop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Neil's smiling right now.
Thing called the Ocmeebo.
Yeah, what you have is not only do you have like a console that's sold at like 1,000 units per month, but it's also complete shit. It's amazing. I'm so excited for that. It's gonna be great.
So we're gonna with that. Okay. That's our news for the week. There was nothing. You just shaking your head. Nothing.
I further response from Shinboy, but if he cares enough, he can weigh in on another episode.
Okay. So we're gonna hit a short break, and we'll be back with what we've been doing and the other stuff we're gonna talk about this week. So check you out after this. And we are back. Hey guys, how you guys going? What have you guys been up to? It's been 2 weeks, but it feels like it's been a long 2 weeks since we fucking got
here. Been a long time for me between.
Yeah. let's just fucking jump into it. Neil, what have you been up to? Just in stuff, and aside from what you've been playing, then get to what you've been playing. But what have you been up to?
Sure. Well, I started a new job, so I've been kind of working on that since I was last on the show, so I've been pretty busy doing that. But I've been kind of revisiting old games. I've been doing a little bit more drawing on my tablet. Just been trying to get back into artistic stuff a little bit more, that kind of stuff. So that's been pretty fun. I jumped into the Overwatch beta most recently.
Nice.
And I played a lot of that. My exposure to Overwatch has been kind of minimal.
You to run further. Tell me about first-person shooters and third-person shooters that you play and like. Like, are you a person who liked CS back in the day? Are you a person who liked Battlefield like more recently? And like, is that the kind of history you're coming from? Like, where are you coming from with this?
Right. So I come from a history where I played Half-Life 2 Deathmatch a lot.
Nice.
And then I also played Day of Defeat Source. That's where I came in.
Okay.
So mostly just Source Engine type shooters.
Right.
And then I play Call of Duty for a while before it got pretty stale. Obviously,
were you a TF guy? Like a big TF guy as well, or?
Yeah, I was in the beginning. So then I kind of took a break, and TF got a little too complicated for me in terms of weapons and all that. So
right.
And drops and hats. Etc. So it kind of turned me off of that a little bit, but I respect where the game has gone. So I've always liked the base skeleton of that game a lot. So Overwatch seemed like a pretty natural progression, I guess, in terms of team based play.
So you're not like someone who like, because there's a lot of people who've played Overwatch who are like, I don't even like shooters, but I love Overwatch. So you're more like a person who's like got more of a shooter background.
Yeah, and I think one thing that might get swept aside a lot is people's exposure to MOBA style characters, I think, is very important to remember when looking at Overwatch. I played League of Legends a bit, and I played a little bit of Dota. I was terrible at Dota.
Right.
But League I was fairly decent at, I'd like to think.
Yeah.
In terms of understanding the game and its mechanics and its sort of meta play, it was kind of a fun little thing to mess with. But I wouldn't necessarily say that the Overwatch heroes adhere to sort of a MOBA-style character, but they have the same attitude, art direction, and sort of game philosophy of MOBA characters.
Right.
You have all sorts of stuff like crowd control abilities. You have debuffs. You have buffs for your allies. You have all these things. You have respawn mechanics, home bases, etc. And it's all objective-based as well. There's just no creeps, and there's no... Yeah. It's all skill. It's basically all skill based in that regard. Some would argue that Bastion is not skill based, and I would maybe be in that camp. But that's because I just got.
Is that the big ape dude?
Bastion is a robot that turns into a sentry gun at the drop of a hat.
And, right.
And their ultimate is
yes,
they turn into a tank.
Nice.
They turn into a tank, and their gun usually one-shots most people. Maybe not the tanks, like the actual like tank characters. Right.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think they have 21 total characters right now, and their business proposition is really good because you can when you buy into the game, the base game only costs $40, 40 US, and you get all the characters that they will ever release, is what they're claiming. And all the maps and modes.
So do you think they'll be releasing a lot more? Because there's already like 20 characters in this game, right? Like this.
Yeah.
And it seems like balance is a big concern in general, right?
And I here's what I think their schedule is going to be like. I think they're going to release Heroes in packs of three or four.
Right.
Which gives them kind of a nice sort of season progression, I think, is sort of what I've come to understand about that. So you have like a season where there's three new heroes and we can see how the season plays out and they can kind of fine tune things as they go through there. And I think they're talking about having more internal or closed betas for those new characters to try them out, which I think is a really wise idea. I think they, I think Blizzard has had enough experience to know how to at least sort of put their content through its paces before it reaches the mass audience so that they can avoid like pure disaster. But I came away from Overwatch being very impressed. I think right now, I think the number of maps and modes may be on the low side. And I kept finding myself wishing that I was, that when I was on a certain map, right? So like Fire, or was it Watchpoint Gibraltar or something like that, right? That it wasn't just that one mode on that map. Or that setting, rather. I wouldn't mind if there were multiple maps that were based in the same setting. But as of now, once you hit that setting, you know exactly what game type you're going to be doing. Hmm. And it can make the actual game itself feel a little bit more limited. Mm-hmm. Because you're maybe hoping... It's kind of the Battlefront problem, right? Where it's like, right. Oh, we're on Tatooine. Well, okay, it's Walker Assault, right?
Right, yeah.
That kind of problem.
Yeah, but so like it feels too linked and you... get expectation the moment the map loads rather than having like some more like
right you're not kind of pleasantly surprised like if you're just in kind of a you know like a all modes kind of thing or consequently if you're like I just want to play Payload right which is lifted directly from Team Fortress because it's an awesome mode, it's really great, you kind of come away with it being like, oh well, there's only four maps for this mode, right? When maybe I thought that the whole game was launching with like 20 maps for all those modes. I think FPS games in general have kind of set that expectation that you'll be able to get more bang for your buck out of each map that they ship. And I think developers in general have kind of leaned on that to make
those being your impressions of Overwatch. Tell me why. Okay, first and foremost, do you really like Overwatch? Like, what are your overall impressions of Overwatch? And just in a couple words, because I'll ask you just a follow-up question.
Sure. I think it's like kind of it's going to be kind of a go-to game, to be honest. Like you got a little bit of time to play with some friends or even just yourself, jump into Overwatch, just have a couple matches.
So you're really sold on it. So it sounds like you're actually sold on it.
Like I bought it because of the beta, but I wouldn't say that it's going to be like my top game, if that makes sense, right? Like I'm a very much an RPG kind of guy, but I do enjoy like Twitch shooting and I like team play a lot. Right. So that seems like the kind of good fallback game or kind of a good filler game in terms of like, excuse me. As I said, like I only have a little bit of time, so I'm going to jump into Overwatch, get some stuff done. You know, there's no progression really other than cosmetics. And that's the kind of thing that I wish more shooters would adopt. Is just giving you all the tools that you want or that you can use right away.
So this is gonna be
that's what makes it very attractive to me. So
it's gonna be a difficult question because Overwatch is kind of drawing things from so many different genres that a lot of people, especially in the PC market, are very very familiar with. So people in the PC market are familiar with shooters, they're familiar with MOBAs, they're familiar with the hero concept of every unit being distinct and different and having their own like whole deal. They don't even mesh. Like if this was like an RPG, it wouldn't make any sense because everyone's entirely like an ape talking to a robot. Like none of this makes sense.
Right.
but that's normal in the hero unit kind of genre, which started with MOBAs, right? So the thing a lot of people don't really express, I haven't necessarily expressed very strongly in my opinion so far, is why is Overwatch good? What about it actually makes it a good game, aside from the fact that it has these things that people are expecting from all these other genres mixed together?
Right. I think what it really comes down to is, I think we're coming out of a more recent era in shooters where netcode and connectivity has been a major, major pain for getting what appears to be fair and optimal gameplay. Like Battlefield, for example. I mean, that's the most obvious one where that's been a massive, massive hurdle in terms of making that series feel next gen. There's sort of this exponential scale going on where graphics and size needs to keep improving. But I think Overwatch, much like Team Fortress at the start, I would argue, this is coming from someone who doesn't play Team Fortress much anymore, so take that with a grain of salt, has a much more focused sort of vision, I think. When you approach a hero, I can look at a hero at any point and understand what they could do to me and how I can fight them or how I can't fight them. And that's very important, I think, for a tightly shooter. And that's not to say that Overwatch is perfect. There's some heroes that are kind of out of whack right now. Bastion being kind of one of them that I think the community is trying to decide exactly what to do with his powers and his skill set. Because he's one of those characters that's not fun to play against at all. And I think every character needs to be just as fun to play as it is to counter or play against. And right now, Bastion's only counter is to turtle up with a Reinhardt shield in front and hope that someone is going to shoot through the shield and shoot him, or there's, you need a fast mobility character and hope to God that you can get behind him. And yeah, it's just not fun to be killed by him at all.
So essentially, does all just boil down to a clearly defined art style and cohesive aesthetic plus good gameplay, good game feel, and decent balance? So it's just like,
I think so. I think that's a very winning combo because let's take a look at how Destiny approached it. Destiny has very good art style, has very, very good controls. What it was missing was a plethora of content and a story, a narrative behind its content that would propel it past the life expectancy of the content.
Right.
What we're seeing with a game like Overwatch is there's no PvE element, right? It's only player versus player. It's a competitive shooter. But they built up a marketing campaign that injects lore into people's minds, even if the lore isn't necessarily present in the game. Whereas with Destiny sold itself on, you're in a galaxy, you're shooting aliens. That's the most basic thing. You'll find out the rest of the cool stuff.
Read these cards. Read these Grimoire cards.
Which is not there. But Overwatch has done a masterful, Blizzard has done a masterful job at marketing this game. So much that Battleborn, which is a completely different game.
Entirely different. In every way.
Entirely different mechanically. But has a similar sort of art style and sort of look, at first glance, has almost been entirely kind of been pushed aside in the minds of sort of mainstream gaming at the moment. So, and that's something that I kind of want to dip into Battleborn soon to get my own impressions on it for myself, because it does look very interesting. But I think that's a winning combo.
Yes.
Yeah. They know what the game is. They know how to sell it outside of what it is and bring people into it. So
does it play better than similar games? A lot of times I hear about Overwatch and people seem to surprise how well it plays, and to me that really means so little, because does it play well compared to Doom? Does it play well compared to Call of Duty? What do you mean by it plays well and feels good?
I would say I would say 80% of the heroes, right, that you're gonna play don't have hit scan weapons. So you're constantly aiming. Like Junkrat is basically the demo man from Team Fortress, right? You can even rocket jump like the soldier.
Right.
Farah, she has a jetpack and she can fly around. She just has a rocket launcher too that you have to sort of guess where it goes, right? And even a lot of the hitscan weapons are all short range, right? Mm. They might be like Reaper shotguns, so you have to be in the right place to do it. Or really like Widowmaker, the sniper, has a hit scan. Bastion has almost hit scan targeting, but so much of it is sort of positioning, understanding how the weapons perform and operate. And that, so I think it has that sort of, I don't want to call it Doom appeal because, like earlier sort of shooters that did not rely on hit scan, but I think it's a little bit more forgiving of any network hiccups because there's a lack of hit scan for a lot of heroes. So that positioning feels even more important. That it's very hard to describe, but I think the game feel matches the pace at which the weapons can perform, which I think is a very difficult thing to get for a lot of games.
Maybe even the same way that Destiny's game feel is almost perfect for its shooting. In its PvE, when you're playing new PvE content that isn't terrible, Destiny feels better than almost anything out there.
It does. It really does. Yeah. And I played a ton of Destiny. Yeah. Like I put embarrassing amounts of time into Destiny.
Same.
I would say that the place where, in my opinion, as a Destiny player, the gunplay breaks down is actually in PvP the most.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gunplay in that is. It matches nothing. Yeah, it feels very average compared to the abilities, which are emphasized in PvE.
Yeah,
and are almost sort of restricted to a very high degree in PvP. Yeah. Those abilities feel very sparse in that shooter.
Yeah. Whereas here the two match and they gel really well, and so you'd say like just the feeling of running around shooting dudes feels good. And that's why people love it in Overwatch.
Well, it's also every character has a narrative for how they play, right?
Right.
With Tracer, you know that your whole thing is I have like zero health and I just need to get in and out. And I have this awesome ability that lets me rewind time and I can go back to the place where I was before. Like, that's cool.
Nice.
That's a narrative people can get behind. People can understand how to play her just by knowing what the character is like. Whereas with the soldier in Team Fortress, like I would wager a lot of people that first played that game didn't realize that you could rocket jump. That doesn't seem like a very intuitive thing to do with that character. Whereas Junkrat, right? He has a mine that he can toss out and he can choose when to detonate it, right? But he can use it to propel himself forward. But his whole character is like, he's just this crazy demo guy that's willing to blow himself up to get what he needs to do, right? So you're more willing to try those kind of things and see what the mind does to you just by tossing it out. You're like, oh, shoot, it propels me. I can totally do this, right? The narrative behind the characters makes them easy for people to play and understand. And I think that's why as a team game, it works so well because you understand what your place on a team could be.
Right, yeah, that's actually something I haven't actually heard much when it comes to shooters in general. Like it's almost like a gameplay wise, it's very similar to a rotation in a WoW, for example, or Guild Wars, where it's like your character is made to have this specific tool set, and the mastery of that very limited tool set, to be fair, but it's like easy to learn, difficult to master. There's so much within that because it's limited and because it's so balanced, you can get a really good like handle on how your character plays, and that is also different to how any other character in this thing plays.
Exactly.
And I think one of the major like compliments I heard about Overwatch over time, because as a person who has zero interest in Overwatch, it's still fun to see people being excited about video games, right? So like another fantastic thing I hear about Overwatch is the fact that every character you try, you play it and you're like, oh, this is actually a fun character to play. And this is like, it has, and your deal about every character has its own story actually works at multiple levels, because you're right. Like every character plays differently because their tool set is different. And there's very few shooters where the actual core tool set of a, of the players are different. So if you think like a modern warfare, you have different weapons, right, but you're all kind of running around shooting each other. Gears of War has, right, the worst because essentially everyone's just roadie running with a shotgun. This is just like every character plays entirely different in a way that Team Fortress did, but with like 20 characters instead of just like six or whatever it was.
Right. Yeah, everyone's base gun is different. There's no real gun that operates exactly the same way as another character's, like almost ever.
I think that point is worth considering as well as like, so earlier you guys talked about how Bastion is super OP right now. But if the game is as well thought out as you say, as like we've been talking about, there's probably a good chance that like Blizzard probably knows that at face value, Bastion is kind of OP, but like you look at one of the other defensive characters, is it Zyrga? It's the Russian pink haired lady.
Zyra. She's actually a tank character.
Yeah. So I don't know much about her, but I know that someone has said she is one of the most complex characters to learn.
Yes.
And so maybe there are valid things to counter Bastion, but we've only had a week to play the game.
And there are like, I've been reading on the subreddit and trying to kind of digest that. And I don't think Bastion's OP. I still rest on the idea that he's just not fun to play against. He's very counterable, but I don't think that countering him feels satisfying, especially because I think on most of the maps, any sort of defensive play, which is where Bastion is usually used, any sort of defensive play means that once you kill Bastion, as soon as he can respawn, he's maybe like 10, 15 seconds away from being able to set up shop again.
Right.
Which can make dislodging him feel very pointless.
Competitive and pointless, yeah.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, I think if there was a little bit more investment or something like that, I don't really know the way. I don't really have any like super good ideas for fixing him, to be honest, or even if he does need to be fixed. I think it's okay to have, I think maybe if his spin up time was longer, I think that would do it, because at the moment there's really no penalty for him switching targets in the middle of firing. That might be a way to explore it. But there's another character that is turret based. He's basically a copy of the engineer from Team Fortress. He builds his own turret. He can throw out armor packs for other people to pick up, but he doesn't have a teleporter like the engineer or anything like that. But he also has a gun that's also very skill based to use. It actually fires a shotgun blast, or it fires a rivet, which has a drop like the crossbow in Half-Life.
Cool.
Yeah. So it feels very satisfying to use. And his ultimate is he kind of powers up his gun, he gets a little bit of armor, and his turret also gains like rocket launchers on it for like a limited time. but his turret is very easy to counter. It's very easy to kill, and it has a window, a range, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't see you across the map and turret snipe you like Bastion can. So it feels very fair to fight against. Because once you see it, that turret's not going to move unless he decides to rebuild it, and that takes time, and that's precious. Time is the most important commodity in Overwatch right now.
That reminds me of like another point I found that's really amazing, because I want to round out this discussion. You have to leave soon, but I have a point to make about Overwatch, and then a final question, and then we can kind of wrap it up. So the point I need to make is, there's something to be said for, and this is something that I really loved about Uncharted as well, and I'll be talking about that later. Probably not in depth, but I will be touching on it later. The visual cues in games. Visual cues in games is like one of the most difficult things to get right. But when a developer has learned how to get it right, it makes them transcend in other developers in the medium. So for example, in Overwatch, you're like, oh, this turret has this range, and when you're outside the range, you know, it can't hit you. How does it communicate that? I'm assuming there's a visual cue that lets you know that. There's probably the blue circle on the ground, or like a some form of like, can you describe it to me? How do you know what the range is for the turret by looking at it?
I would say that actual information is not communicated all that well. Mm-hmm. There are nuances to the game that are not immediately apparent.
Right.
And I think that's what does sort of give the game some of its depth.
Cool.
Is that there are certain that's things that are withheld from you. But by the same token, I would say within moments of taking damage, I can usually tell exactly what character is hitting me.
Nice.
Based on particle effects.
Wow. So like if that's spectacular.
It's very, very satisfying. And it's also sound design. Sound design is extremely good.
Right.
Footsteps are amazingly well
differentiated as well.
Used. Yeah. You can tell if it's a heavy character coming towards you. You can tell if it's a tracer coming towards you. You can even tell if it's a flying character that's coming towards you. That's all very well differentiated. Even particles of bullets flying past you. Everyone's bullet color is a little bit different or a different shape.
Wow.
Too. So it's and even the explosions of their, so like when Junkrat fires his grenade launcher, you know exactly, hey, these are Junkrat grenades. These aren't so-and-so's other projectiles that explode after a certain amount
that's
of time.
That's amazing. And that's...
You can read it really well.
That's
kind of
what I mean. Like it's like some developers just get it. Like there's ways to communicate to the player that don't need you to sit there and tutorialize. And they don't need a big meter on the screen. And they don't need, like...
I always think back to... do you guys remember going through, like, Left 4 Dead? And they had the commentary nodes, right? They had one of those nodes about character silhouettes and the importance of character silhouettes in games. And that was one of the very first times that I really started thinking about how games try to read themselves to you. And Portal was also very, very important in that. And that sort of readability, and ever since then, that's been something that I usually think is a very important hallmark to any game. And it's something that sometimes withholding that information is part of immersion.
Part of awesome. Yeah.
Like in Battlefield, right? Not knowing where you got killed from, that can be just as part of the gameplay and immersion. But for a game like this, where that team play is so important, I would say they are. They've shown a very high level of mastery of that.
Nice. Yeah, that's very, yeah. I just want to point that out. Like things like, I put like that. You're saying that you could tell who's shooting at you just by like the color and shape of the bullets and the sound of the footsteps is like something you can't say about almost any other fucking game out there. And that's impressive as fuck. That's incredibly impressive. That's up there with like Dota 2 and that kind of stuff. Doubleton is zooming in on himself and freaking me the fuck out. that's up there with like Dota 2 and like and many of the MOBAs out there, and why it's so, and the fact that you can already do that after 1 week of play is also very encouraging.
I went into it not very hyped for the game at all. I was thinking it was just going to be kind of another Team Fortress clone and all that, but I mean, I'm excited to get back into it when it finally launches. So it's probably not going to be the game I plug the most amount of hours into. But in between those single player games and RPGs, like I'm definitely going to be jumping in there with friends.
I'm so curious where this ends up on Game of the Year list, because I bet it's going to be on a lot of them.
Me too.
Me too. Yeah, it's going to be very curious. And with that, Doubleton, Noob, do you have anything to add on Overwatch? You've been very silent. Noob's started playing Napoleon, Total War, whatever the fuck.
I was interested in playing it. I didn't get a chance to, but I definitely have a lot of friends who are also very like, who did get it to play the beta, or even if they did not, are still very excited for it. And it's soon. It's like end of the month, start next month, I think.
The 24th, I think, is the date. So
the end of this month is up. I forget what else is coming out, but there's something else coming out, and I don't remember what it is. I remember this month is huge. This month is huge for video games. I forget what.
A lot of stuff coming out.
Oh my god. And with that, thanks,
I'll probably
Neil.
Pick it up. I'll probably pick it up, guys. You guys should pick it up too if this game has legs and people are playing it 1 month later.
I have
it's still
negative interest for this game.
Okay.
So Neil, the other three of us, and listeners will know this. I'm want to get your impression of it. Who do you think out of the three of us has purchased the most AAA games this year?
Oh my god!
It's not me or Cynic. Oh,
are you sure?
Is it actually me?
I thought it was me. Are you sure?
I feel like you. Like he got The Division. Oh, he got Hitman. He got.
That's true.
Not many things came out this year.
AAA games.
Yeah. Oh, I got Rogue One.
I'm still in the first half of the year, though, as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. That's true.
Like, I'm probably only going to pick up. Oh, I might pick up Doom, actually. Oh, fuck.
I'm probably going to pick up Doom, too. That's the thing. Like, by the end of the year, I'm usually the one with the most fucking mainstream things. If you look at our top 10 lists, like, Noob has more, like, fucking Paradox games and random fucking other shit. And I've got, like...
Fuck that. Oh, I don't. No more Paradox for me.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I'm with that. Thanks, Neil. We'll let you go. You need to head out here.
So, but yeah, thank you so much for having me on. So I look forward to hearing the rest of the podcast. So
do you have any plugs before you go?
Oh man, plugs. Just plug your channel, like you did last time, you self-serving. Gotcha. you can find me at twitch.tv/slamandrews. I've been meaning to, now with some of my newfound time, to actually getting back to streaming. So it's been a little while, so I'm hoping to get back going there. So I wanna play some more sort of RPG stuff, and I was thinking about branching out into turn-based strategy a little bit as well. Nice. So we'll see what happens. But,
cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good one. Cool beans. Nooborama.
Well, I have been in the alpha for No Man's Sky. It's a shit game.
No, I have not.
Unfortunately,
you've been playing nothing. There's nothing on this. Actually, wait. Okay. All right. What have you been playing?
All right. Okay. So I have been playing this game called Fallout 4. Have you guys heard of Fallout 4?
No.
I
heard about Fallout 3. That was supposedly a good game, even though I never played it.
Yes.
And, so like, that's Skyrim, right?
So Fallout 4 released, like or fully
that was,
released.
That's my favorite one of those. It's like Skyrim.
It's like Skyrim. Fallout 4 released its survival mode. They revamped the survival difficulty in the game.
Right.
More in line with New Vegas.
Now you have
had.
To like, eat and stuff, right? That's the whole deal.
You have to eat stuff. You have to sleep. You can only save at beds. In the game, you do more damage, but things also kill you basically in like 3 hits.
Mm-hmm.
What other thing? You get infections, diseases, no more fast travel.
Hmm.
The range at which you like notice there are things around you disappears. Also, no enemies on your compass, so you can only visually spot enemies from where they're shooting you. Things like that that make the game so difficult that for me it's not fun. So I brought back quick saving with mods.
Okay.
Because I don't want to actually lose 3 hours of progress, which I did when I first played the mod, and I died to a random raider in fucking power armor with a mini nuke that instantly killed me, and I lost all of my progress back to like fucking the beginning of the game. So I said, fuck that. No, I'm not doing that. I also add, yeah, that's it. That's in terms of what I changed. That was the only thing. Like everything else is really interesting. It keeps the game is a lot more different. Like I find myself playing it in a completely different fashion where I'm definitely a lot more cautious, even with the quick saving. Right. Like you're a lot more cautious because you don't want to die in general, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been kind of like sneaking past more often rather than always engaging. I've been a lot more like conscious in my decisions on what perks to get and sort of like focusing on specifically semi-automatic weapons rather than trying to be like a generalist in terms of like you know, also having a mini nuke launcher and also having pistols.
Well, that was the right way to play it anyway. Always specialized.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, but in the sense, like in normal difficulty and like the survival before, you could sort of get away with having it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's sort of, you can try out. And I wanted to try it as much as I could on my first couple playthroughs, but now it's sort of, I'm definitely playing it, like finding myself focused on just getting specific items for my weapons or trying to complete a specific kind of armor set.
Mm-hmm.
One interesting side effect of sort of the survival mode and surviving or like staying in beds and sort of not being able to fast travel is like settlement building has taken a brand new importance. In the sense of like having the right settlement at the right location with like the right stash of water, food, and guns.
Right.
And it's growing the right plants so you can make noodle cups that heal both thirst and hunger. And sort of like, no, literally just it changed, it sort of merged sort of that settlement thing, which was less about, less sort of like a layer of gameplay more than it was just another thing you could do, mm-hmm. into sort of it immediately put it into perspective that, oh, I need to make sure that this certain settlement has what I need. And because it's in a central location, because you can't fast travel, you want it to be somewhere you can easily access it. That's pretty interesting.
I just found, and this might be incredibly racist, but
yeah.
I just found you as an Asian man in university making a character in a video game that has noodle cups the most hilarious thing.
Yep. I haven't had cup noodles in about 2 years. So
yeah, I don't think many people actually... The dude who gets through university by just eating mee goreng every day isn't actually that like common. The thing is, they do exist, and that is deeply funny to me. But sounds like it's making it interesting for you, which is good. My question was though, to what purpose? Like, are you like, what are you doing in Fallout at this point? You've played almost every quest already, and you've played the single player to its complete.
Well, I've played every quest. I've played every quest, period.
I mean, like, the mod tools have been released, right?
Yeah, the mod tools just came out last, like, along with Survival, so mm-hmm. I've been testing out a couple of the mods, playing around with that.
Okay.
But I'm just getting a new character ready for Far Harbor, which is coming out in 2 weeks.
Okay.
So
sure.
That's what this playthrough is for. Yeah.
That's cool. Anything else? Because I want to ask you about your job, but we'll get that last.
Age of Empires 2. Age of Empires 2. I played Age of Empires 2, and that's about it.
Okay, noob. Yeah. You're now an adult. Congratulations. You have a full-time
job. Never thought I'd see the day.
I know. Yeah. Like, little noob is growing
up. I jumped from fucking lying shirtless on a couch to the white-collar workplace, and I'm excited. Massive transformation.
Yeah, okay, can you move the camera around your room just so I can verify there's no pizza boxes surrounding you at the moment? Or are there pizza boxes? Okay, there is still a pizza box.
There's Cheetos.
There's only one. I only have one pizza box because I regularly throw out the garbage now. And like, I have a bag of chips. And that's it.
Also, no posters on your walls.
No posters. I don't do posters.
Me neither.
But yeah,
of us, you're the only one who does posters, though.
are the only one who
does posters. I have a
poster. I'm wearing a Book of Mormon shirt right now. Obviously, nobody listening would be able
Are you wearing a t-shirt with a tie printed on it?
It's a Book of Mormon shirt that I got from the musical. I have a Book of Mormon poster rolled up somewhere back in Toronto, but I have never put it up.
I'm curious at what your transition was. Like, was it an eye-opening experience to finally get a full-time job and then realize
it's co-op part, it's a part of my university, right? Mm-hmm. It's sort of like a part of my degree, right? Like, I work like professionally in the summers with like a thing related to my field. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did that in high school. I worked at City Hall. Mm-hmm. I would say that was more sort of like it felt more like work than what I do now,
right?
In the sense, like, that job was political. Like, I worked at the city councilor's office back in Toronto. So that was literally picking up phones, like responding to people who are angry at you, mm-hmm. because they're fucking like old and it's 11 a.m on a Tuesday and they really don't like your city councilor, so they also don't like you, and then dealing with that. So that actually felt like real fucking, like, you know, you don't want to be humping the phone lines and like listening to the general public,
right?
Because fuck the general public. I'm sorry. I probably shouldn't be saying that as an employee of what I do. Fuck the general
it's
public.
It's like the Parks and Rec things of people just calling in for the worst stuff.
Yeah. And there's like, there's a scene in The Thick of It, a show that me and Cynic enjoy.
I love it.
Where the minister for like social affairs is like hunched over on a chair. It's like, I know I shouldn't be saying this, but I really fucking hate those public. I feel alienated. Like, they're aliens. I feel like they're fucking aliens with their beady little eyes and their mean little faces. And that is kind of like, I totally feel. And I'm so glad that, like, my job title is communications officer. It does not involve communicating with the general public, because I would fucking abhor that job. Could you imagine being that guy working at the tax service, the IRS for Americans, right? Mm-hmm. At being like, hey, you haven't paid. Hey, dumbass, you haven't fucking paid your taxes in 3 years. And then he says, I think income tax is illegal. And then he hangs up the phone. Like, imagine how frustrating that job would be. No, my job is to write media lines for the spokesman. Right. I write like the official message for the commissioner's office. I write like monthly reports for senior management. Like, I literally have this giant cubicle and I spend most of my day like browsing Wikipedia or the news websites, because currently not much work is coming in. It's like, even when it's busy, like, it's interesting work where you're like, you know, and like the I think the heaviest work days was one day when I was selling baked goods and then the next day when I was blowing up balloons. I'm not even joking. The commissioner of the CRA, which is he is the boss of 60,000 people, right? He was walking by because I work at the headquarters, and I was fucking balloon in my mouth, blowing a balloon. And he's like, hey, what are you guys doing? And I'm like, I'm blowing up balloons. And he's like, good luck with that. And he got on the elevator.
As someone who's also like kind of in public service, like attached to public service, that is exactly what it's like. It's just like sometimes it's like some random thing.
Yeah. Like fucking chief of staff, head of the army walks by and you're just with like a pink balloon in your mouth, like half, and you're like, your cheeks are filled up with air. And he's like, hey, what are you doing? And I'm blowing up a balloon. Yeah.
It's like I'm just like walking past like fucking naval commanders like carrying a table so we can set up normal tea, and then they're just like, ah. And I'm like, yeah, I know, right? Just keep walking.
No,
I'm in the wrong job.
I'm just like, yeah, I'm next to like fucking lieutenant commanders, and we're all just like waiting for dim sims to finish heating the steamers, and we're just like...
No, genuinely, that's the thing though, right? And it's like, I was last week, what I was doing was I'm in the social committee at work for the for my division, and like we were doing a bake sale to raise money. And so I'm literally like, people brought in baked goods, and I was literally pushing a cart around the office and like walking up to directors and be like, ring a ding ding, we got treats in the house, and then they're like accepting like change to set. And that's my job as communications officer. It's great.
Yeah,
I love
similar stuff
life.
Here, and I'm a project engineer.
Like, and I also work like internal comms, like corporate comms. So basically, like, I almost only communicate with like
people,
my division and senior management. That's the only people I have to deal
That's
with.
That's the best thing, because it's like you're talking to people. Have you had the thing where you realize that almost everyone in public service is either ultra competent or ultra incompetent? There's nothing in between.
Yes.
Yeah.
But everyone's like, I think it's only my bureau, because apparently some other places are like super serious, but like everyone's so cool and hilarious.
Ultra chill. Yeah. I don't think it's serious anywhere, honestly. People are just people. That's what you learn when you get into like this kind of thing. I'm just like, I'm walking past like our PR, HR guys, and they're just talking about Game of Thrones, and I'm like, spoilers. I'm like, they're like, sorry. And then I just keep walking, and this happens like every fucking day. It's good. Good times.
It's so good.
Do you like having a full-time job? Like, can you picture the rest of your life?
I'm still looking, like, I'm at a point, because I still don't have access to like the work drive, because IT is awful as with everywhere, right? I have access to the internet and everything, so mostly like I'm asking around if people need help with work and things like that,
right?
If I finished everything on my plate.
Yeah,
but I'm enjoying it. Like, I could totally imagine working at the same job 9 to 5 for the rest of my life until I die, and I'm probably okay with the vacations in between, which is good.
Yeah,
because I have like the department I work in has its own separate union outside of the public sector union, and they recently just did like a bargaining thing where they're guaranteed to earn about 0.5% more than any other raise. Like, they're guaranteed to earn 0.5 more than any other like union group in the public sector.
Nice.
Like, during public sector wage rate increases. So
there
you go. Nice. Comfy.
Yeah.
Fucking comfy. If I start now, you know, I'll be earning decent money 10 years from now.
That's cool.
So that's good.
Yeah. So yeah, people at home, consider joining the military or otherwise the public service. It's not bad. It's actually not a bad place to be.
Sell cupcakes, blow up fucking balloons.
Also do actual work, but like,
yeah,
between
also do
that.
Work.
Yeah.
But also, also actual work involves fucking sitting at a cubicle and you're not, you don't have to deal with fucking the worst people
Monsters.
In the world.
You don't have to deal with pregnant ladies. That was my work. That was the worst when I worked in retail.
Really?
Pregnant ladies. Or someone who just got married. Those are the two worst groups of fucking people. You just cannot stand. They're like, it's out of stock. But we can't put together the thing for a new living room. And she just burst out crying. I'm like, what is wrong with you? Fuck it. It's going to come in a week. Get over it. Jesus Christ. So, yeah, like, fuck, worst people. Anyway.
But yeah, like, most of the time I'm just, like, walking. Oh, yeah, like, our department has just, like, a giant table filled with food cupcakes that's always there every day. So I get to eat free food. It's in like a prime location in Ottawa called the Byward Market, where it's like the center of everything in terms of restaurants.
Yeah,
go out there every day for lunch.
Nice.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
That's the one thing I stopped doing. Like I stopped eating out for lunch because I realized like, wait, a lot of my wage is going towards eating out, and
it's like $7 a day for lunch. It's
yeah,
good.
I was like, oh, that's not that bad. Here's like it's like fucking 10 to 13
like artesian Italian sandwiches too.
That's not bad at all. Yeah.
Yeah.
And with that, that's what you've been doing, Durbleton.
What's up?
How you been going, man?
Have you been blowing up balloons and selling cupcakes?
No, I haven't been doing that.
How's work?
I guess with that.
How's retail?
Work.
How's looking at the beady eyes of the general public?
Well, I don't normally deal with the beady eyes of the general public as best I can. I usually just work in the back and
It's a smart place.
Mornings.
That's
why
well.
I show up to work at 4 a.m, so I usually don't have to deal with folks.
Right.
No, I'm looking for other stuff, but nice. You know, it's whatever.
Sure. No, I think that's the smart one. That the back is the way is the place. That's nice. Yep. You don't have to talk to people.
People are always angry, and they're never pleased to meet you.
Sometimes they're nice. Well, like, the ones you remember are the ones who are total
assholes.
Because,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, without going too much into it, I spent a fair amount of the time in between recordings, pretty much like the bulk of when Overwatch was available, I was trying to upgrade my computer to Windows 10.
Oh man, this is like a harrowing tale.
I don't want to go too much.
Yeah, because you talked about it last time, right? Yeah. You touched on it last time.
Yeah, did we?
Yeah. Like
before we jump into your story, I'll just say that I got a notification that says you can update to Windows 10. Mm-hmm. And then I clicked it. And then 10 minutes later, I had Windows 10 and all of my data intact, and
same.
It was so easy.
Yeah, same. So
I never had that. I have that now.
Yeah.
But right. I never had that to begin with.
Hmm.
And I did, like, I plugged the USB in, installed, like, used the Windows Creation Tool, installed that. And typically what I've done with every single Windows upgrade I've ever done, I usually have a disk or a DVD or something, but I would like wipe the hard drive and do a clean install.
Hmm.
Just because, like, hey, I had 30 gigabytes free, and it takes, I think, 30 to install Windows 10. Yep. So it's like, even if I go ahead with the upgrade, I'm going to be like completely full. I might as well just do a reformat. Turns out, PSA to anybody who hasn't done their Windows 10 upgrade for yet and is planning on doing a reformat, you have to first upgrade to Windows 10, then activate it, in which like it gets activated, like the motherboard gets activated with the free copy of Windows 10 for Windows HQ, and then you're able to reformat.
Right.
If you try reformatting, you've completely screwed the pooch.
You get a new key with Windows 10, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, like I don't think they ever give you the key, but if you just say like I'll authenticate later, then like it checks once it's online again.
Yeah, yeah. You never enter a key, but yeah.
I'm not sure. So here's the other thing: Windows 10 has been available for about a year now, roughly. I mean, like it's been a little bit more than that, but that was when they were doing like the beta program, I guess, for Windows, right? I remember like Gerstmann talking about it because he was in like the early adopter program or something. Mm-hmm. there are still not official like drivers for Windows 10 for like motherboards and and BIOS and what.
Yeah, if you have an old motherboard, it's not going to have any.
No, you're just going to have to use the Windows 8.1 ones or worst case Windows 7 64-bit.
So I eventually got like it took 23 hours, I want to say, to install Windows 10. Like it would it went at a snail's pace. And then even when I did finally install it, it was still going at a snail's pace, and the processor was running at 100%.
That's weird.
So akin to like just foot all the way down the accelerator on a car and going 2 miles an hour, and the thing is making all the noise,
right?
Which is not a healthy thing for your computer
and not normal. That makes so little sense for installer. I don't know. I don't know what it was doing.
I updated all the drivers, did all the stuff I knew all at the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
Still wasn't fixing anything. I bit the bullet and called in like Windows technical support, since like I had a legit copy.
Holy shit! Wow. I've never done that.
I did not know they were
45 minutes as we were painstakingly trying to get him to like get the person on the other end to virtual control my screen.
Right. Huh?
It never connected.
Oh my god, that's fucked.
So, yeah, I said, screw you, wiped it, and have reverted back to Windows 7 for now.
Wow.
I might try doing Windows 10 again with... Mm-hmm.
But now you've like got the thing that says upgrade now, something. Right? Now you've got
the thing that says upgrade now.
Yeah.
But I don't trust it.
That's what worked for me, man.
That's the one that works for everyone.
It works so easy. You just click the button, all your data is there. It takes an hour.
You're clean installed anyway.
It took me less than an hour.
Yeah. Took like 20
minutes. Yeah, I'm clean installed anyway.
Yeah.
It wasn't as bad. There's
an option to clean install. Isn't there an option to clean install? I want to say there is.
I mean, there is, but you have to upgrade first and activate Windows, because if you choose a clean install, you don't have the CD key for it. Right.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I have all the data backed up and all that, apart from like programs, which I'll have to find.
This is your opportunity. Try it. Worst case scenario, waste an hour. If it takes 23 hours, kill it, because it's not going to work.
If it takes 23 hours, something's wrong.
Yeah.
But the other thing, just like end of July, unless they decide to extend the free offer longer.
Right.
End of July is when...
We're ticking down. We are ticking down. Yes. And Windows 10 is good. I like Windows 10.
One of the reasons why I wanted to do it was PlayStation did that patch like a while ago now, like a month, I want to say.
It doesn't work on anything but Windows 10.
Yeah.
Sorry, you complete your sentence. I know what you're talking about. I don't think the audience has got caught up with you.
It might. Windows 10 has, or PlayStation 4 has the ability to stream in the same way that, like, I assume the tech is the same way that, like, in-home streaming for Steam gameplay or something works.
Yeah.
It basically runs through your cable network or your Wi-Fi, and you can play your PlayStation virtually off of the PC.
Yeah. So essentially, your PS4 is running and streaming the video to your PC, and you can use your controller hooked up to your PC to play PlayStation 4 games. And it looks good. It worked. I liked it.
But only if you have Windows 10.
Yeah. A lot of people were angry about that. And it was... At some point, I was just like, yeah, you know what? Let's whatever. At some point, you have to.
Everyone's gonna upgrade sooner or later. I've heard some mixed things, but it's been mostly positive for Windows 10.
Yeah, there are problems with it, like anything in 2016, apparently, but it's good.
Yes.
What would you play if you were to get it working? Like, what was the impetus behind trying to get remote play working?
Well, one of the things was Overwatch, because I had one of my friends was like, hey, I don't have a good enough PC. I'm going to be playing it on PlayStation 4. I'm like,
Is it coming out on consoles? Well. I have no clue.
Coming on everything. And people say the console versions are good. Like, people are really... Well...
Is it coming out for Mac?
Okay, no. Yeah, all right. Everything that matters.
That's just it. Like, Blizzard, historically, like, I think it was with Hearthstone or something that, like, they finally made the switch of like, no, we're not supporting Mac anymore.
Right.
But back in the day, Blizzard was like one of three developers that supported Mac.
Yep.
Like Blizzard and Bungie and I can't remember who else. Like, yeah, back before the Halo days, Bungie used to support Mac.
Right.
Marathon.
Poor Mac. Man. I don't know.
I guess they could. But yeah, that is something I'd want to play for the PlayStation.
Go on.
But yeah, there's a couple other things I want to do with Windows 10, but mm-hmm. I will just have to wait until I have that operating system, then I'll talk about it.
Cool.
Because I'm kind of pissed at Windows right now.
Yeah.
You hit that button, man. Just try it out.
Should have hit that button, man.
See what happens.
It's easy. They tell us.
The button wasn't there.
Yeah, no, but now it is. So you got it. You got this. You can do it. It's
Yeah, but I'm recording right now.
Yeah.
So
I see two other things on this list. One of which overlaps with mine, so we'll do that one separate second. What's this other thing you have on your list?
The other thing is, so Ludum Dare 35 happened. It was shape-shifting. I tried working on something, but I ended up working halfway through the weekend and didn't get the done in time for my thing. But the winner of the Ludum Dare, like, overall, there's a couple different categories of, like, most innovative, best, like, overall, like, best team game. But the overall game was something called Window Frame, which I can't remember the guys. I follow them on Twitter. But anyway, Window Frame. I'll say the guy's name later. But it's a very clever game that I would encourage people to check out because it's imagine like a window that takes up the bulk of the screen, like let's say 75%, it's center image. You don't actually see that window. Instead, what you see is a smaller window that exists inside that box. And as your character moves left and right, the box tracks, like moves along with it. And so like as you move along, it's almost like that's the fog of war. And so as you move left, like the level moves around and there's stuff to see,
right?
But you can only see what's inside your box.
Gotcha. Similar to like if you imagine D&D, like, and you're holding up a lantern, like everything past there is darkness. It's kind of, yeah.
Yes.
Cool.
But then the game takes a neat twist in that, like the whole premise is like, you have a bow and with five arrows, and you need to kill some vampires throughout the course of this game. And every time you successfully kill one of the vampires, you lose that arrow. And so you start with five, and as you progress, you get down
lower. Oh, so between vampires, you recover arrows, but once you kill a vampire, that arrow is gone.
Yeah, so you can press a button to recover arrows, except for ones that have used to kill special vampires.
Right. Awesome. That's cool.
If you shoot any edge of the like window, not the terrain, like if you hit the terrain, it's whatever, but if it hits the edge of the window, or if you hit the terrain and then like, you hit the train on the left and then move to the right, and so the terrain gets eaten up by the window. The arrow attaches to the side of the like the window, and gets stuck in place. And so you start moving right, and like the box, like the window gets longer, or short, and also you can jump off that, and then you can like you can actually stretch and skew the window, and there are parts where you have to use the edge of the window as like a platform.
Oh wow, that's really smart.
It's really clever. It's really cool.
Really cool.
The game is made by Manigore, I want to say.
Nice. Some random dude, or is he like a dude known for stuff?
He's made several games. Okay. They're all little games and whatnot. Right. Yep, Daniel Linson at Manigore, Manigore, Mana. But yeah, like he's made six or seven games previous, like Ludum Dare entries. Maybe I don't think they were winners, but this is one that was he deservedly won. It's a really cool game that I encourage people to check out.
Cool.
Yeah, that's
it. That's what you've done. Cool.
Pretty much. I also apparently lost my Dark Souls 3 save. I just finished the game, but there's still people
on the game. What?
So I have been speeding through the game now that I know where
things are.
That's rough. Wait, so how'd it happen? I've heard about people losing the Dark Souls 3 saves, but I never.
Apparently, your Dark Souls save is kept in app data, which I didn't think to back up.
I wouldn't have thought to back that up either. What the fuck? That's a stupid place to put it.
Like Dark Souls 3, the actual installation file is on my second hard drive.
Right. Yeah, same. It's on my games drive. I thought it was just going to be there. Fuck. Now nope. Actually, you know what? I'll probably never play Dark Souls 3 again. I don't know. I don't really usually replay games in general. So, cool. So the second thing you've been doing that I've been doing too, and the only one of two things I have done in the last fortnight, you watched Civil War, Captain America Civil War.
There's a very nice theater in Portland, called the Baghdad. It's like, it's a single screen theater, but it's this grand, like, there's a balcony level to it, and like it's very like it's an building that was probably built in the 50s kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very grand, but it was just funny to like text a couple friends like, "Hey, I'm gonna go see like Civil War at Baghdad. You want to come?" And like, is that a documentary or is that Civil War at Baghdad?
Nice, nice.
Entirely different kind of film.
How'd you like it, Hamilton?
I thought it was okay. I mean, mm-hmm. it's, I guess without going too much into spoilers, it wasn't what I expected.
Yeah, that's my big takeaway. It wasn't what I expected.
It's kind of like Game of Thrones and like, okay, they're not following the books. I don't know what's going on anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like, I don't know what you're doing, but okay. I'm here for the ride, apparently, because I'm in the seat.
There were parts that I was happy still happened. There were parts that didn't happen that I was kind of bummed about.
Right. I am ultra bummed if this is the extent of Civil War and Civil War is just done now. Like, if that was it, it was like, because the way it ended, it could go either way. I'm not going to say how it ended, but it could go either way. That this could be the last Civil War movie or it could be one of many. Fuck, man.
Yeah.
Like, I liked a lot about that movie. Did you like Spider-Man?
Yes,
I agree.
I like Spider-Man. I like the interactions with him and Cap.
Mm-hmm.
That
whole scene was fantastic. I actually enjoyed that entire sequence. That entire sequence was fantastic. I'm not gonna say which one it is, but the one where he's talking to Cap, is that whole thing is fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That was worth the price of admission to me. As a Tony Stark fanboy, unashamedly, I think that this movie might have had too much of him in it, in that it's called Captain America, and it felt like Captain America had like no character development for this whole film, and it just kind of he was kind of inconsequential, honestly.
He was more just the driving Iron Man
Captain America.
Yeah, it was Iron Man 4 featuring Captain America.
it was a Captain America in the same way the latest Mad Max was a Mad Max movie. Like,
yes,
Captain America was like the driving device. Yeah, we followed through on it. Like, he was the central character, but it was everyone else's story, or like, you know, their characters progressed.
Yeah, their characters, things actually happened too, and they did stuff. Like, I'm not going to complain because fucking I love Tony Stark and I like that whole everything about him in this movie and what he went through and all kind of stuff. But like, I definitely saw that, like, this probably shouldn't have been a Captain America movie. But even that aside, like, there's a lot about it I really like. It has some serious problems. This seems to be the theme of 2016 so far, is it has serious problems, but it's really good. Like, the next game I'm going to talk about is the same thing, but like, there are things about that movie that just don't work, in my opinion. But like, holy damn, it's I liked it a lot. I don't think it's like a 5 out of 5 amazing movie, better than everything else, whatever. I've seen people saying, "Oh, this is the best Marvel movie." It's good. It's not. I don't think it's even as good as the first Avengers movie, but it's good. Like, it's definitely watchable.
You would recommend it?
Yes, I recommend it. I'd only recommend it to people who would like this type of movies. Like Guardians of the Galaxy, I'd recommend to anyone. Anyone with a functioning brain can enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes,
but this is definitely someone who's like if you're a Marvel movie guy, you'd enjoy this. If you're not, then you can kind of go either way on it. Or if you like Spider-Man, if you're a Spider-Man fan, you probably really like this. Unless you're like a die-in-the-wood, like core Spider-Man fan, in which case you probably wouldn't, because they changed some stuff about Spider-Man in really interesting ways. If you'd ask me like,
carry on.
Well, Aunt May, specifically.
Yeah. They for once actually kept the things about Spider-Man actually core.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I guess this is a spoiler to like Spider-Man from a decade ago, but he actually makes his own webbing opposed yeah. to like him growing his own or
exactly.
something.
Like he and his power level was just right and stuff. Like, oh, Black Panther was awesome. If you'd asked me a week ago, I could go for hours. We've just been going for long enough times. I don't think we should. And considering this isn't a movie podcast, I don't really want to sit here talking about every part of this movie. But like, I loved Black Panther. He was really cool. Like
this is a movie where we had three like really good like black leads.
Yeah, that's
and two female leads, which is a rarity in like big budget movies these days.
My heart broke for the Vision in a way that I didn't think it could ever break for a Marvel character. Because he's just so nice. Paul Bettany just has a thing. I don't know. I just like Paul Bettany, I guess. But yeah, like this stuff, cool stuff happens in this movie. It also has some major problems, but it's good. And with that, I think we're going to get to my big talking point, I guess. Strap yourselves in, boys. I'm going to be talking about a video game.
Oh, jeez.
The last Uncharted game came out this week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a person who's
like... Are
you
sure it's the last one?
I'm not going to comment on that either way. Probably yes. I think it's going to be the last Naughty Dog one. I just posted a fucking bunch of screenshots into Skype chat. These are taken by me, and this is running real time, and every frame looks like this. Like some games are like, oh, this moment looks good, or oh, like that like angle looks good, or like, oh, like that, this specific like confluence of things running at the same time is kind of impressive.
Those
this game is
don't look good.
No, the textures don't look amazing, but like as a total, like all together, I'm not gonna say it's the best
again. It's like still images don't capture how good it looks.
No, yeah, they never do. And so when still images to me look this good, and it's like every frame's like that, it's just like holy shit.
Rose colored glasses on because they look nice, but it's not the best looking game of all time.
So that was my first talk about, because I actually really respect how Beastcast handled the Uncharted, how this game, in that they didn't actually talk about Uncharted 4 much at all. Like, they just talked about, like, here's some talking points around Uncharted 4, because the core of it you should probably experience for yourself if you're an Uncharted fan. Numerama, what do you think is the best looking game of all time? Or what do you think is an example of an amazing looking game? And why?
Battlefront.
Yeah, that's a good call. It's a fantastic call. I think specifically Forest Moon of Endor looks fucking incredible. Thurbleton, what do you think is the best looking game of all time?
I'll have to get back to you on that. I don't really know.
Yeah.
Like
you could say fucking Super Mario Kart, and I'll be like, yeah, that looks amazing. Like it doesn't. And what this game made me realize specifically about this topic is that there'll never be a definitive answer to that question, because something like some people would say something like fucking 8-bit game. Like there's some 8-bit games out there that still look great to this day. Castlevania, definitely the one I'm thinking of. Symphony of the Night still looks fucking amazing to this day, especially when you consider what its constraints were on its system that it ran on. If that's part of your consideration, if that's even part of your criteria, there is different between people. What people appreciate about an art style is different between people. And she's like,
So the best looking game for me is probably like World of Warcraft, like back, like pre-Cataclysm, definitely. Mm-hmm. Like with your constraints of like, this was the engine, and there were no loading screens between levels.
It's up to you to determine what your criteria are, because that's never part of my criteria. But if that's part of yours, I can definitely see that answer, because World of Warcraft was gigantic when it came out.
I have several folders full of screenshots that I took that I just enjoyed just going around taking pictures in that game.
Yeah, and that's a perfectly valid answer, and that's what this game did to me and made me think about when I played it, because I got to the point where I realized, like, there's no way I can convince someone that this is the best looking game I've ever seen. There's nothing I can really say to convince someone this is the best looking game out there. And because it's ultimately subjective. Noob is probably right in that, in like technically speaking, the Forest Moon of Endor is like black magic. Like it's amazing in what it looks like. And I can say that because there's a thread on NeoGAF called it has a hilarious name. It's like the PC gaming screenshot thread of Zero Compromises. It's like the PC gaming master race thread of, hey, we're running these things at like fucking super sampling it to like fucking 38,000 by whatever, and then down sampling it to fucking just big enough so it can fit in a 10 megabyte file, like screenshots of video games running with all mods on. Fuck it, let's just go, right? And I was like, okay, when I was thinking about like how good I think Uncharted looks, I was like, okay, let's just start with what other people think are amazing looking screenshots of games. And I went through like 40 of the 75 pages of that thread, and only three games I think come close to how good Uncharted looks, both in stills and in real time.
Vanilla, right? No mods and things.
No,
like
including
that.
Mods. So oh, three games look mod. Close or better, right? So the three games I found that look close or better, two of them look close and one of them looks better, right? The single game I think is by far, technically speaking, the best looking game of all time is Battlefront Endor with mods. You can't beat that. Just some of it looks real. Some of it actually looks real. Like it's just shocking at how good that game looks. Without mods, however, I think it actually looks worse than Uncharted. It kind of looks like the forest sequences look about the same, but when we talk about what criteria is, those forests just look like forests, whereas the forests in Uncharted technically look almost as good, but artistically look better. So when you go into a forest in Uncharted, you don't just see a forest, you see like an artistically interesting forest that also happens to be technically good. And that's the difference between the two. To be fair, like Star Wars is trying to look like Endor and it matches that. Yeah. So that's absolutely fair. And Endor was something that was done in the 70s or 80s. So it just looks like a forest and you can't really say much about that. But that doesn't change the fact that when I walk into a forest in Uncharted, my jaw just drops. Not just because of technical mastery, but because of how good the forest looks. Whereas in Star Wars, it's just like, that's just technically impressive. That's what, different reasons the jaw drops. The other two games were Rise of the Tomb Raider, with mods, looks almost as good as Uncharted, and that's amazing. Some mods make it look better, but those are like the ultra texture packs. This thing doesn't run in real time, it's just for screenshots, mods. And the third game was, Assassin's Creed Unity indoors. Outdoors looks shit, but indoors, that game looks spectacular with mods. It looks incredible. Actually, it looks Battlefront good indoors with mods.
Wow.
It's fucking awesome. But it's, it just made me think, like, what does it actually mean or matter? And so I made a thread on Giant Bomb, which is like, I can't tell you how good I think fucking Uncharted looks. It just looks fucking incredible. Tell me what you think looks amazing. Tell me what you think the best looking game of all time is, and tell me what your criteria is when you look for that. And in most cases, the criteria was actually a combination of art style and art style and technical. And what came out of it was, of like the 50 or 60 posts from Giant Bomb, is that four games pretty much came ahead of everything, were ahead of everything else. And those actually aren't the same games I just named. So the four games that came ahead of everything else were Legend of Zelda Wind Waker, Witcher 3 with mods. I didn't mention Witcher 3 with mods actually looks, yeah, that's about, yeah, Uncharted good. Fair. Without mods, no, but with mods, yeah, but it's different. One's open world, one's not, so it's kind of unfair. Witcher 3 with mods, Wind Waker, and PT. Were the three games that here up again, and Uncharted 4. Those are the four games people most named as the best looking games of all time in that thread. But it's because of that argument. It's the same reason that Witcher 3 won best looking game last year instead of Star Wars Battlefront. It's that combination of technical mastery and beauty that kind of makes it. And that's the only real way I can remotely circumspectly and around the point way say that I was just shocked at Uncharted 4. The images I showed you don't give you anything what it looks like in real time, and there's parts in that game where, so there's a stat there called in the stats is like amount of time spent standing still, and it's actually a stat in the stat screen when you go there. And I play that game for roughly 19 hours, one mark of excellence. The normal move speed, if you move your thumb, the analog stick all the way forward, is to run. I walked more in that game than I ran. I actually just tilted it forward so you'd move like a normal leisurely pace through environment. A, because it felt like it matched the pace of that game better, because it's a slow, much slower paced game. But B, just like, I just wanted to see more of that environment. I walked more than I ran, and I stood still for about an hour of that 19 hours, just fucking looking at things. That game is incredible. So yeah, so Uncharted 4, okay, visuals aside, it looks fucking amazing, but you can decide that for yourself, like fucking whatever, like it's your call. I think it's the best looking game I've seen. That game is interesting, not because of what it does different, because having played Uncharted 4, overall rating, I give it 5 stars or a 9.5 out of 10. The problem with it is the soundtrack isn't that great, and the it feels formulaic towards the end. But the reason it gets such a high rating, even though it's kind of formulaic and has a bad soundtrack, is the game does something. It marries The Last of Us with Uncharted in a way that I didn't think was possible, but more importantly, in a way that many pieces of fiction don't try to do. And what I mean by that is, when you watch a big summer blockbuster, it's either a fun movie or a movie with a point, like Lord of War, right? I forget, Nicolas Cage, that's the name of the movie. It's a God of War, Lord of War. I forget what the
it's about. Lord of War.
Yeah, Lord of War. Or Man on Fire, right? There's like a point to it, or it's like a big dumb action, like Bad Boys 2 or fucking Transformers. It's like something dumb and fun and whatever, right? And the difference between the two is usually just like how complex the bad guy is, or like what the motivation of the main character is, aside from the pomp and circumstance. Those are usually the big difference between the two. One's either like ultra black and white, and the other is like, oh, he's doing it for a good reason, and those reasons are complex and probably kind of fucked up, like fucking whatever, like human slavery and all that kind of stuff, like the crazy dark shit that can be in some of those movies. But in both cases, what you have is a simplistic plot, like a very simplistic plot. And a plot that doesn't necessarily do much in terms of like environmental storytelling. In some cases, like very few movies achieve environmental storytelling. So I'd say SimCity does a fantastic job of environmental story setting, or I don't want to make this a movie thing, but like, and very few games do environmental storytelling. So best games, environmental stories, I'd say Skyrim's up there. And I'd say like a lot of Bethesda's games, Fallout is up there. Fallout 4, even though I don't like Fallout 4, has fantastic environmental storytelling. Like, very few games do that. But even many of those games have very simplistic plots. Like you're a person trying to save X from Y because of Z, and that's kind of it. Whether you go through character development or not, Mass Effect 2, like amazing, amazing, amazing game. But you are a dude trying to save the universe, and you're Shepard, and you don't really change much towards the end, except you can get more Paragon points so you can convince people of your point better. That's like essentially it of that game. The reason Uncharted 4 is amazing is because it does something that very few other things do in general in media, is in that it takes a grown-up stance on something that's fucking dumb. And that is very interesting and cool. So at its core, it's about a dude going out to get treasure. And that's it, right? It's to save his family because whatever, blah, 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 treasure. Let's fight some pirates, whatever. It's like straight up, like it's just basic. But there's an extended sequence in that game where you're just living a day in the life of a retired adventurer. That's it. You go to work, you go home, you meet your family, you eat dinner. That's it. And it is fucking amazing. Like, it's just like, it explores the idea of why people do what they do. Even though, like, the surrounding is crazy, like, he's going to go on these crazy adventures that aren't believable. It explores the idea of, like, why people do what they do. Like, What does the
it is the Indiana Jones thing of him just like a day at the university.
Yeah, exactly. And that for like 2 hours. Like the first 2 hours is essentially just that, right? It's just it's that and some backstory, but essentially this that, right? It's just, and it's like, but it explores that. It's like, what drives a person to go out and put his life on the line for stupid shit that he never actually... He's gone through 3 games, found 3 lost cities, destroyed all of them, and hasn't gotten a fucking dime from it. All he's gotten from it is to pay off his mortgage and pay off his car, and that's it. And he's... And sorry, and also his engagement ring. That's it. That's all he's gotten. He's almost died 1,000 times. He's fucking been shot at, shot people, killed people, like fucking...
He's murdered millions.
Yeah. He's been put in prison, been beaten up. He's gotten out of prison just by the hair of his fucking, like, teeth. He's just fucking... He's gone through all this garbage, and he hasn't gotten anything out of it. What drives a man like that to do that? And that's what the first couple of hours explores. And then as the game goes on, it continues to treat the plot with that level of gravitas. It's not just like, you still get the funny quips. He's still Nathan Drake. He's still having fun. He still legitimately enjoys going out and finding fucking treasure and finding out facts about the past. But like, why he does so is explained. And more importantly, like the message of this game, which I don't want to ruin too much, but the message of the game boils down to me, what it actually means to grow up. Like, The Last of Us was like, what it actually means to care for someone. That's kind of the message of that game. Like, what would you do for someone you love? That's kind of the idea behind The Last of Us. And this game, I don't think is... I actually don't think is as good as The Last of Us because of other reasons not to do with the plot. But the core of this plot is... Hey... Keep your dreams alive. But part of growing up is realizing like how much of those dreams actually are the things you think they are versus like the feelings they generate, the time you spend with the people involved, the final like end results and the journey in between. How much of that is things you think they need to be and how much of that is actually things that matter? And learning about yourself, which of those things actually, like finding out those answers for yourself, what those things are. And that's what this game explores. And like so few other fucking games do that. I would love to talk to you guys about spoilers. I would love to spoil the shit out of this game. I haven't been able to talk to anyone about it, but like in the end, he says things and this doesn't ruin anything. Like he says some things like he would never have said before. Like, I don't care about the treasure. Where is my brother? He says things like that. And he's like, in a situation where he could make a choice right there to be the treasure hunter he's always been. But he's made decisions about his life and his personality and he's grown. And it's like, sorry.
The treasure would mean nothing if he didn't have his brother kind of thing.
That, well, it could be that simple, but it's not even that simple. It's even more deep than that. It's like, it's literally like, no, the treasure's still, like, it's like, just talk about this one phrase, like, the treasure still means something to me, but this thing means more. And we, like, our whole thing is to get this thing together. But I don't even care about that because we've gone through this other shit together. And that's changed my opinion on that. And there's this person waiting for me. Like, it's 8 different things around one statement. And that's one thing in this game. And it's like, no one does that. No one but Naughty Dog I've seen so far has done that complex a character. To the point where it just feels like a person. And that's so hard. I can't even say that about Joel and Ellie. Like, in the end, they're caricatures. This is the closest I've seen to just a fucking person going through stupid, crazy, dumb shit that no one should. Like, this doesn't make any sense and survives crazy shit that no one should be able to survive. Sure. It's still an action movie, but it's an action movie with a person in the main lead rather than just a caricature. And that's just the only game I've ever seen done that. It's now my 5th favorite game of all time. It is what I think is going to be very difficult to impeach as the best game of this year. I'm going to be arguing for very strong. I think it deserves its 93 on Metacritic. Like, it's, I think it's incredible. And there's, yeah, it just does everything so fucking well and it's so hard to talk about it. Finally, I would like to say that it also, it not only does all that stuff with the characters, but like, the stupid subplot that's usually really dumb and doesn't and just ends with like monsters at the end, like big blue people that you shoot with a crossbow at the end, like fucking dumb shit and fist fighting a dude under the tree of life, like ridiculous shit, actually feels like it's given enough time to not feel that ridiculous and is actually has people in it. And you learn about those people's motivations and why they do what they do and what happened to them and like what that means for what adventuring means and what treasure hunting actually is and all that kind of stuff. It's just, it's stupid how much depth they put into this dumb video game. And it's just like, oh, I can't. And add to that, like how amazing it looks and how well it plays. And they changed combat just enough. And it almost feels as open in combat terms as Metal Gear Solid 5. Like it's just fucking, oh my god, this game. And that's all I can say. It deserves its accolades. And that's my Uncharted 4 bit. I wanted to do a spoiler cast for it, but Kinda Funny Games did a spoiler cast, and they actually kind of said everything I wanted to say. So I don't actually feel like I need to do one myself. Also, plus that to the fact that I know no one else who's finished this game yet. So there you go. I wanted to play this game in 2-hour chunks, like playing a couple chapters at a time over like a week or so. Like I wasn't expecting to have finished it. I played it in 3 6-hour sessions because I came from home from work. I was like, I'll play a couple hours on Uncharted 4 just to see where the plot goes. And then I look at the clock and it's like 1 a.m. in the morning and I'm just like, fuck. And it's a double fuck because it's like, fuck, I thought I'd get more time out of this game because it's the last Uncharted. But also, fuck, like I need to wake up in 4 hours. it's awesome. I can't. It's not as good as The Last of Us, but it's an amazing. It's a landmark game. It's not an important game, I don't think, and that's a different conversation to have. Like, I think The Last of Us was the important game of Naughty Dog in the recent past. Like, it changed what storytelling could be. This just does that more. Like, this just applies those learnings of what storytelling can be in video games to a different game.
It's only a 93 on Metacritic.
Only 93, man. That's rough.
There are games that are higher scored than that.
Mm-hmm.
There are. But they might not necessarily be better than Uncharted 4.
Oh, they could be.
Right.
I think that's perfectly arguable.
But they could not be, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but like, I'd actually say that every game that's not a remaster that's above 90, I think are actually legitimately. Those games are probably some of the best games ever made. So we're talking about like what? Persona 4, fucking Uncharted, fucking Mass Effect, Last of Us, Super Mario Galaxy,
Grand Theft Auto 5.
Grand Theft Auto 5 is amazing. Like, I'd actually say that no matter how much you fucking criticize the Metacritic system, it actually does make sense in a lot of cases. So anyway, that's my Uncharted bit. That's my soapbox. I'm going to step off. Watch the Kinda Funny Games spoiler cast. It's really good. And their review. Both are different sides of the same thing. It's really cool to see that going. And congratulations to Naughty Dog for making another fucking masterpiece, in my opinion. And in many people's opinion, as you can tell. And with that, anything else? Any other topics this week? I think we're done. Yeah, I'm gonna play Doom soon. I think I'm gonna play. I don't know. I haven't 100% convinced myself because, like,
I'm probably gonna pick up Doom with my card.
Yeah, apparently it runs really. No, actually, apparently, you know what pisses me off? Your fucking 960 runs Doom better than my R9290, and that's garbage.
Yeah, because you got an ATI card. That's your problem. That's your fault. You can only blame yourself.
Shall we move on to plugs?
Oh, I just want to say that. Okay, fine. I need to say this. There's a game I'm going to be playing as a preview next week that I think people should play so they can, like, listen in and know what I'm talking about. It's, like, $25 on Steam. And I'm trying to fucking... You do your plug, and I'll look for it.
Okay. So the first plug is going to be the Ludum Dare game. It's free to anybody who wants to get it. You just got to download it. It's, again, called... Window Frame, all one word, by Manigore. And like there's GIFs and all that, or GIFs, however you want to pronounce it, that you can see how it looks. But then the other plug, especially given what you were talking about, Cynic, about how like there are just some games out there that can just do really good level design, and like it's hard to see that in pictures. I'm pretty sure I've plugged it before, but it's worth plugging again because it's so really good. Mm-hmm. There's a YouTube series called Other Places by the guy, like the channel is by Ultra Brilliant, but it's Andy Kelly, who is a writer at PC Gamer. And he's done like two or three different ones of Skyrim. Definitely one of like, he has like something like 60 or 70 videos of just like 4 to 5 minutes long of just really good like shots in games. The latest one was Dark Souls 3. He's done a couple on like Alien Isolation, which like that is a really good looking just area as well. I am very positive he's done one for The Last of Us. I would not be surprised if like in months time we get to see some really good shots of Uncharted.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's Other Places by Andy Kelly is worth checking out.
Nice.
Cynic.
I just
you should check that out.
I've you've mentioned it before, and I've looked at least good. One. I've looked at one video. I don't know if it would. Hey man, take baby steps. I just need to say that quick note about that. I took about 3 screenshots in The Witcher 3. This is like a subset of the screenshots I picked in Witcher 4. So if you're using like amounts of time, I was like, I need to take a screenshot of this. Anyway, and level design, the fact that those areas are so massive and you can still intuit your way through them in Uncharted without an arrow pointing which way to go is just. I could just go on about Uncharted. But anyway, I won't. The game I was going to plug in that I'm going to be doing, playing it this week, and I'll be talking about it next week. And I'm not sure if you've plugged before, Thurbleton, and you might have because I tend to find arty things after you do and then plug them as if it's the first time I've ever heard of them and you get angry at me.
Go ahead.
Fragments of Him. Have you?
No, I've not done that one.
Fragments of Him is
plugged it.
Is a game that was written about on Giant Bomb recently. I forget which article it was. It's a game about Lost. It's about 2 hours long. It's like a very arty kind of fucking... This dude dies and it explores everyone he knows and like what they go through when he dies. And that's pretty much the total of it. It sounds amazing. And I'll probably be playing... like knowing me, I'll probably be playing Doom. I might not. Just as a palate cleanser, because I feel like because games don't all have to be about feelings and like what it means to grow up and like fucking loss and all that kind of shit. Some games can just be fun, and it feels like Doom is a game that's just fucking, it's just fun, and that's cool. I kind of want to try it out.
Mindless violence.
Yeah. The only thing stopping me is
hey, Doom's coming out.
Yeah. The only thing stopping me is like it runs badly on ATI card, and that fucking pisses me off. So I might not get it till I get a R9, like a GPU upgrade. So yeah, my plug this week is actually going to be the series of books I'm rereading for people who are on the books tip. It's been like fucking years since I plugged this, like actual years since I plugged this probably.
But you have plugged it.
Yeah, of course, before. The Dresden Files is...
Oh, right.
Yep. Is an amazing series of books. I'm rereading them now just because I finished a bunch of other books and I was like, you know what? I miss a book that actually is good. So like Sausage Maze is great, but like I've read something between that and now that I was like, I need a palate cleanser from this garbage. So I went back to Dresden Files and it's still fucking amazing. So Dresden Files, I will include a link to the Goodreads of this series in the show notes. Noobarama plugs.
Hitman. I want to plug Hitman. I keep wanting to plug Hitman because it's such a good game and no one's going to play it. But if you're out there and you have money to buy a video game, you should buy
that
Hitman.
Game looks good too, by the way. Yeah.
It's a good game. It's such a shame that they fucked it all up with their stupid thing release structure that just turned everybody off of the game.
Yep.
It's too bad.
They fucked up. They done fucked up. But yep. that second episode... Up. Going so by good. The amazing Giant Bomb quick look and the follow-up amazing fucking video of them finishing the DLC, which is great. If you want to find out like how to not be a hitman, watch those videos. Yeah, it looks good. I actually agree with you. I will get behind you if you're going to push that for top 10 this year because if you get behind me and pushing Uncharted.
Oh, for sure.
Alliances are being made.
I'll make that fucking alliance. Let's do that. Thanks for listening to the Scotchcast this week, and goodbye.